This is the Head On Radio Network.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute after the hour of 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Thursday evening. The 17th of January, at least right here and right now. Enjoy your podcast if you listen later. Don't let the non-liveness of it throw you. It's the same show either way, and we're tickled to death that you're listening any way that you are listening. Oh, let's see. It's another one of those where-to-start kind of evenings. Let's work the Fox angle for a little bit. Not because it makes me feel good, not because it doesn't make me feel like I need to be deloused when I'm done wandering around in Foxville, but just to make sure that you know, because you're not watching the SOBs, make sure that you know what a whole bunch of America is sitting slack-jawed and drooly watching and hearing and being subjected to. Oh, God Almighty. You're going to love this. Now, you know, our national television orgy, more than anything else, is, of course, the Super Bowl, the world's worst football broadcast. I don't know how to play, honest to God, and whether it's Fox, NBC, CBS, ABC, whatever, I don't know how the players manage to find a rhythm in which to play because of the constant stoppage of play so you can go. And yeah, because really, if you talk to players, you know, there's a groove, there's a rhythm, and you stop that momentum, and sometimes it's tough to get it back. Well, the Super Bowl has certainly not earned itself a name in recent years, or any years hardly for that matter, with a very few exceptions, for being scintillating football. It is spectacle far more than sport. Now, just stop it. Those of you who don't like sports, just stop it for a minute, okay? I know, it's opiate of the masses, it's all, it's fake, it's dummied up, it's a fraud, sure. But it's also a place that, I mean, its iconic status has risen to the level of it's close to a semi-religious secular observance, all right? Nobody tunes into anything on Christmas that approaches the ratings that the Super Bowl gets. So the Super Bowl is scheduled for February the 3rd. It will be broadcast by Fox. And guess what? You don't get a break. Granted, it's a Sunday. at least theoretically, a day of rest within the lexicon of so-called Christianity in the United States. But you don't get a break. Not if you plan on watching the Super Bowl. Reportage indicates... Reportage indicates that Fox Super Sunday will have embedded in it a behind-the-scenes look as the action gets underway for the Super Bowl, as well as Fox Business Networks, you know, Fox Business, the network that's tanking for all it's worth, Alexis Glick. Any kin to Jiminy Glick? I used to watch Jiminy Glick. Alexis Glick will offer a peek at the best commercials and the economics behind the biggest sporting event of the year. Meanwhile, and this is the fun part, this is the part you're really going to love, sports fans, Fox News correspondents Carl Cameron and Major Garrett are going to provide, during the Super Bowl, live updates from the campaign trail. No, really. Live updates from the campaign trail. I don't know who's going to wind up in the Super Bowl. I'd personally like to see the Patriots and the Packers. But at any rate, and I will be rooting for the Packers, by the way. The storied franchise, the legendary coaches, the history of the team. You know, the Packers. How can you not? Unless you live in New England, and then I understand. So it's bad enough that you have to sit there and stop and start and stop and start. It's like... with the commercial orgy. There was one commercial left and Victoria's Secret bought it. Yay! Boobies! Jesus. Sometimes I'm just ashamed. Just general shame, you know, not ashamed of, but I don't know what to do. Do I get to watch the Super Bowl or do I have to sit and watch Carl Cameron report on radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee blessing the football before the game? Mitt Romney doling out secret underwear for the Patriots? Jiminy. Live updates from the campaign trail. Why is all this happening? This is all happening because for Fox News and Fox Television, ideology is everything. And all football season long, it has burned like holy water on a heretic. It has burned like holy water on a vampire that NBC has had such success with its Sunday night football. And its insertion of Keith Olbermann, who, after all, is a legitimate sports guy, we might add. And that Olbermann's popularity, of course, has gone right through the roof with his appearances on NBC's Sunday Night Football. And this is a desperate attempt to balance it. I guarantee you that with this announcement via a news story in the New York Observer, I guarantee you that somewhere, if you could, you know, hone in one of George Bush's spy satellites on the headquarters at Fox in New York, you would hear the tinny, plaintive voice of Bill O'Reilly saying, "You gotta let me on there. You gotta let me on there. They're letting Keith Olbermann on it at NBC. You gotta let me on there." Because that's what this crap is about. So you've got that Fox issue. And over at Fox Radio, you know, John Gibson's on the TV there, and he's also on the radio box. Let's see, last night we ran for you the audio of Flush Flimball, America's oxymoron, referring to Barack Obama as a spade, and by extension, Hillary Clinton as a hoe. Well, it gets better. I don't know. I expect John Gibson any day now to talk about the American need for Lebensraum. Because if you recall, and this comes from Think Progress, thinkprogress.org, Project for Center for American Progress. Back in May of 2006, Fox News host John Gibson stepped in it pretty good when he started screaming that white people weren't breeding hard enough and were getting outbred by all the brown folks. Well, he feels vindicated. Yes, he does. Based on a minute statistic, John Gibson went on the air, today, and declared victory.
Get him! It is John Gibson. I'm going to go get him. Now, this half hour, we're going to...
The Bee Gees for bumper music?
With an issue that got me in trouble, but as you all know, I enjoy skating on thin ice. It's what I do for a living. And so I'm going to be able... I'm going to reprise this dark moment...
Oh, he's edgy, isn't he?
...since past. Because it came up in the news today, and it appears I was right. And that people... Not only was I right, but people were following my advice. My advice was that demographic studies showed that...
Wait. That people were following my advice. This guy severely overestimates his power with his audience. Remember that ancient Italian proverb, bed is the poor man's opera. But they were following John Gibson's advice. Come on, baby, let's go do it. John Gibson wants us to. Oh, my goodness, take it off.
The United States birth rate is lagging among the dominant or largest population sector, which is Caucasians. Hispanics were having a lot of babies. African Americans were having a fair number of babies. But...
And there he was, a-rutting on my mailer.
Whites in America were just barely keeping above the replenishment level of the population. And I was trying to warn people that this phenomena had gone on in Europe, where the native population, the Anglos, if you will, to use a phrase from Southern California...
Oh, he's hip.
...were just not having kids. And the immigrants... often labor immigrants from Muslim lands were having kids like crazy. And all of a sudden, you know, England wasn't looking so British anymore. And Germany wasn't looking so German anymore. And Russia was having a real problem because, to put it bluntly, selfish white people weren't going through the hard work of having babies.
What, Edith? Selfish white. Oh, this is going to be a comedy program tonight. Selfish white people weren't going through the hard work of having babies. Now, honey, don't make me wear one of them latex thingies. It's just too difficult to get it off. Woo! Or maybe I needed to do that with a Russian accent. I don't know.
And so in a tongue-in-cheek way, I would... You know, did this thing on my word at the end of the TV show about make more babies, and it concluded this way.
And it won't be here either if that should happen. Put it bluntly, we need more babies. Forget about that zero population growth stuff that my poor generation was misled on. Why is this important? Because civilizations need population to survive. So far, we're doing our part here in America, but Hispanics can't carry the whole load. The rest of you get busy. Make babies. Or put another way, a slogan for our times. Procreation, not recreation. That's my word.
Yeah, but see, okay, they're giggling on the set there. But, you know, the right-wing religion industry and the right-wing politicos who think that, you know, Fox News is really Johnny-on-the-spot journalism, that's deadly serious policy to them. Overpopulate the planet, damn it! Quick! You know, it's always kind of lost on these people to observe other forms of life and learn lessons from them. Ask ranchers, ask sheepers, for instance, out in the American West, what happens when you put population, when you put pressure on the, and I'm not comparing anybody to any sort of animal, this is just simple biology. When you put pressure on a population, it breeds harder. The more the sheepers killed the coyotes, the bigger the coyote litters got. And by the same, by extension, you know, because we are animals. We are, all of us, humans. If we're not, then, you know, we're not a rock. We're not a vegetable. We're not a mineral. We have minerals in us, but we're not a mineral. We're not aliens from the planet Zook. We're part of the animal kingdom. And frankly, part of the reason for large families in the past in human history has to do with survivability. You know what? Many ancient cultures didn't name their children until they got to about 7 years old. And that's European cultures, Native American cultures, African cultures, Asian cultures. Didn't name their kids. Because that meant that you'd sort of get attached to them, and odds were that most of them weren't going to survive. And that's from the peasant class all the way up to the royalty. That's why the king couldn't be content with one son. He had to have all the sons he could possibly have. It's the basis behind the idea of the harem. You've got to maximize breeding possibilities because so many babies die. And when you're poor and you've got nothing else to do, well, at least it feels good. Right? Yeah, exactly. So, haw, 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 he replayed his, John Gibson replayed his thing. No, I did not say he replayed with his thing. He replayed his thing from May 2006. Although, I don't know, he may be one of those one-handed journalists, you never know. And then decides, you know, he wants to take credit for, you know, some Fox viewers out there, yeah, I don't know, putting on a videotape of the greatest Ronald Reagan speeches and doing the nasty.
Okay, that set off a storm of protest that continues unto this day.
Gibson is a racist.
Well, yeah.
I regularly get called out by Media Matters for America, the Huffington Post, some of those lefties. I don't know if the Daily Coast has done it lately. Regularly called out. And, of course, that slobbering twit who just barely gets out of the bathtub enough in time to go to a show.
Is he talking about me?
Who calls me a racist.
Okay, so if there were any doubts, John Gibson, racist.
And all...
Slobbering twit. Keith Olbermann. Bless his pointy little head. Keith Olbermann's got more brains in his toenail clippings than John Gibson has in that pointy little head. Holy crap.
Which was a whole quote cropping exercise to make me sound like a racist when I was simply saying, look what happened in Europe. We don't want that to happen here.
No, now, we want to overpopulate.
In other words, get busy. You know,
yeah, because you know the white Europeans, they overpopulated and they had to keep on having these wars, you know, just to keep the population down. Yeah, what's a grieving mother here and there or a million? Whoosh.
A little peanut butter smear on the leather seats on the BMW is not such a bad thing. Go ahead and have kids. So anyway, today it turned.
What? A little peanut butter smear on the leather seats of the BMW is not such a bad thing. Go ahead and have kids. John, that's not where babies come from. You know, I like to think of myself as not prudish, but I got to tell you, I've never... Oh, you know, when the internet video comes out of John Gibson, I don't want to be... I have never, ever... engaged it. Now, a little whipped cream here and there, sure. Peanut butter? Sex?
Turns out the AP medical writer, Mike Stobe, I hold his report in my hand. Let me prove it to you.
That's a Letterman ripoff.
In fact, he said, Gibson was right.
Yes! Gibson was right.
Oh, yeah!
Again.
Oh, it sounds like they're doing something involving peanut butter there, doesn't it?
Feel that, buddy? Huh? Huh?
Huh? Bucking the trend in many other wealthy industrialized nations, by which he means Europe, Mike Stobe writes, the United States seems to be experiencing a baby boom in that we are reporting the largest number of children born in 45 years. That is a John Gibson victory lap.
Start your engines. The John Gibson victory lap.
Have you ever heard so much pathetic ego in a radio broadcast in your life? Oh, this is like having a gauntlet thrown down at me. It really is. It really, really is. Let's see if I can do something about this. Hold on just a damn minute. This will only take a second. If I had a producer, it would take even less. But, you know, we have to deal with things as they come. So, you know, just bear with me for a minute. It'll only take a second. I mean, I can't sit there and listen to egomaniac radio without being a little bit of an egomaniac myself. So, hey, John Gibson.
You dick!
There we go. I'm all better now.
The nearly 4.3 million births in 2006, and by the way, my word was May of 2006, so I was not only right, I was prescient.
What are you people?
Right
on dope?
You're like an aphrodisiac, John.
Ooh la la. I wouldn't say
that. I'm so
Spanish
wasted.
Fly.
That's what you are, man.
Angry Rich, that would be going a little too far.
They got busy.
Well, I encourage that.
You doing?
Procreation, not recreation.
Hey, Shorty.
You got that stuff for a reason. Put it to good use. The 4.3 million births in 2006 were mostly due to a bigger population, especially a growing number of Hispanics. That group accounted for nearly one quarter of all U.S. births. As you can tell, Hispanics are doing the hard work of child raising. But non-Hispanic white women and other ethnic and racial groups were also having more babies, too. A big round of applause
for the white women! Holy cats. I mean, I'm speechless. Honest to God, I am. I am speechless. This is... amazing to me. Who listens to this? Who is the demographic? Who is the demographic of John Gibson's radio show? and hoorah, hoorah for the white women having babies.
Hey, where are the white women at?
See, I can do it too.
All of you out there having those babies. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now, having been proved right, I am curious if the drooling left-wing reactionaries out there still think I'm a racist.
Yes, mainly because you just proved it by applauding white women for having more white babies? And in part, you know, because, well, you didn't prove your thesis there. You didn't prove that the nation is anyhow... Look, it's not surprising. Bad economic times... Listen, any of you out there who invest in stocks, here's a free tip. I am not a stockbroker, and I don't play one on the radio. But a free tip just the same. You will never go broke investing in companies that produce liquor, beer, cigarettes, wine. You won't go broke. Because people buy these things in good times and bad, and in bad times they tend to buy them more than they buy them in good. Same thing goes for sex. When you can't do nothing else, at least you can... Right? At least until you can't do that, guys, at least until you can't do that anymore, and that's when the Viagra kicks in. This is America in the year 2008. A country in which a person is paid vast sums of money to slither in behind a microphone and applaud white women for breeding. Dang. Just dang. Let's check the rest of the clip just to make sure. I just want to check something out here. Hold on.
And if they care to apologize, are you still troubled by the fact that I said Hispanics are doing a good job of having babies and the Anglos seem to have been falling behind? They weren't falling behind. Right at that moment, they were getting busy. Are you still troubled by all that, or are you willing to reconsider the issue in the cool light of dawn, while there aren't certain provocateurs hanging around, flinging names around?
Nope, he didn't. Let's see. He applauded the Hispanics, so that means he's not a racist. Didn't hear any applause for the African American community having more babies. And, of course, I didn't hear any applause for or any inquiry as to how those babies will be fed, be they white, black, brown, or any variation on any of those color themes. Didn't hear any concern for how they'll be raised, how they'll be fed. Apparently, if you're white, you drive a BMW with leather seats and peanut butter on them. Nope, no concern for their feeding, clothing, shelter, no concern for their education, no concern for anything but that they got bread. I know, move on, Bob. But is that disturbing to you? Is it even... Because it is to me. It honest to God is to me. I'm concerned about the nature of our, the health of our republic. I'm concerned with the discourse, or lack thereof, in our republic. I'm concerned about the fact that we are unable, many of us, certainly not you guys, but many Americans are unable to carry on an informed conversation about all this stuff, and instead just sort of open the little top of your brain pan, like everybody's got a little trepanning thingy, and just let them dump the filth in. Yeah, I think I'll watch Fox for a while. Ain't got no use for them extra brain cells, no how. Might as well let John Gibson kill them by telling me all about how glorious it is that the white women are breeding. Hoo-ah. But this is all part of a set piece, you understand. Because it wasn't that long ago that our good friends Thomas Shoemaker and Max Blumenthal documented the fact that radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee stood before a crowd and declared that if we hadn't had all them abortions, we'd have 30 million Americans able to pick the lettuce and wash the toilets now. These things don't happen in isolation, I guess is what I'm getting at. Breeding for Jesus. That's what we got to be doing. But only white people can do that. Now, I mean, there have been times in world history, and in American history, quite honestly, especially pre-white American history, when the effects of diminishing population have had devastating effects on societies. A look at the Black Death's progress through Europe and what it did to the population and what in theory followed from that is an interesting study in underpopulation and what couldn't get done. What happened to the Native American cultures after the barest contact with white Europeans, just enough to spread disease? What that did to those societies is a case study in underpopulation. Because when you get a society to a certain point, you've got to have a certain amount of people to maintain it, and that balance is incredibly delicate. You want to see the effects of overpopulation? Africa, Indian subcontinent, Asia. The effects are all there for the seeing. Disease, poverty, famine, agony. Yeah. But I guess John Gibson's not going to be happy until you can't swing a dead cat without hitting another fellow white human. Because that's what's at the bottom of this. It is race fear. It is a fear that somehow or another white, so-called white culture will be erased from the planet. Me? You know what I say? So what? Because I'm just crazy enough, and I'm just liberal enough, and I'm just enough of a lefty that I see humans as humans. One human has pretty much the same chance as another human under the circumstances to create a viable society on the planet, ergo the fact that there have been well-developed cultures and societies on every culture or on every continent short of Antarctica. But John Gibson's worried about the white people. He's worried about his good, white, pure, Aryan heritage. It's a little embarrassing. Sort of embarrassing in a broad brush, broad stroke kind of way. It's humanistically embarrassing. I mean, there's an admixture of ego and fear and race terror all just sort of swirling together in a vile and stinky little cauldron there that he stirs. He's afraid that he won't be part of the master race that runs the world anymore. John Gibson can't imagine a world that already exists where the white people are outnumbered, where the ideas come from someone besides a white person. He can't imagine it. Can't be true. It's one of those sort of the sun never sets on the British Empire sorts of things. If you get what I mean. White people have always ruled. No, they haven't, John. No, they haven't at all. Most of the time, the white folks have been a blip on the world radar screen. Now, we've proven quite effective at spreading disease, at eliminating native cultures, at utterly destroying entire continents worth of population. Very good at that. We are. We've got a real talent for it. And we've built some machines. And we've done a little bit here and there about developing society and culture. We didn't invent writing. We didn't invent gunpowder, John Gibson. We didn't invent agriculture. We didn't invent the wheel. We didn't discover fire. But never you mind. It's white people that the world depends upon. The United States will go straight to hell unless it is led by a lily-white class. And I mentioned radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstermey a couple of minutes ago. Well, over at TPM, Talking Points Memo, Greg Sargent, writing there, noted that radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee gave an interview to BeliefNet, big religion and superstition site. And on the same topic that he addressed in Warren, Michigan a couple of days ago, i.e. the Constitution and making it conform to some God's standards, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee said, "Well, I don't think that's a radical view to say we're going to affirm marriage. I think the radical view is to say that we're going to change the definition of marriage so that it can mean two men. Here it comes. Ah, sit down. I gotta look at the chat room real quick. Hold on here. Yeah. Peter's in the chat room. Sorry. I think the radical view is to say that we're going to change the definition of marriage so that it can mean two men, two women, a man and three women, a man and a child, a man and an animal." Yeah. Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee has dipped into the Santorum. Man on dog Santorum, you remember him. That's what he said when the Supreme Court overturned the Texas so-called sodomy law that basically criminalized people based upon some legislative determination of what constituted two of. And Rick Santorum came out and said, "Well, thanks to the Supreme Court, we'll be having man-on-dog sex soon." And Huckabee just couldn't resist going there. "I think the radical view is to say that we're going to change the definition of marriage so that it can mean two men, two women, a man and three women." Well, see, that's the Bible's view there, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. A man and three women or four or a dozen? How many wives did Solomon have, Huckabee? How about old David? He was beloved of Almighty God, and he had more wives than you could shake a stick at. Two men, two women, man and three women, a man and a child, a man and an animal. Yeah, well, I can understand him concerned about a man and an animal, seeing how he's fond of eating squirrel. That'd mean I couldn't squirrel hunt no more. All these people, them environmentalists, they'd run out and they'd marry squirrels and possums and beavers. Badgers, groundhogs, deers, elk. They'd be, them environmentalists would marry everything, then you couldn't go hunting no more. And, you know, I like to hunt because, you know, I've got angels in my bullets. I do, praise Jesus, I do. And when I shoot at something, angels carry my bullet right to the target and blow it the hell away. And then I take it home and fry it to popcorn popper. isn't it? It's so easy to laugh at these fools, these freaks, these monsters, these geeks. But let's have our laugh and then recognize that too much laugh and we laugh at our peril. Because there's still a long way to go in the fight for basic human rights for every American. Whether it be based upon gender or upon skin color, race, ethnicity, there is still age. There is still a long, long way to go to reach a status of true equality under the law in this country. So that's what I would like to take away from all of these shenanigans. I mean, I'm just funning and so forth. But I'd like for us to take that away from that. I would like for, you know, every time that we sit around and go, be damned, that John Gibson's just insane. I mean, you know, crazy, insane. Oh, my God. You know, I mean, he's put on there for comedy, right? I mean, there's nobody sitting there. Yes, there are lots of people in America driving down the road or turning on the little radio box on the kitchen table or whatever, sitting there going, nodding their head, a little puddle of drool falling out of the corner of their mouth going, yeah, he's right. I wish I had me a white woman to get it on with. I'd like to make me some white babies. But ever since the accident, I can't. But I sure do hope there's more white babies coming. And hallelujah, Brother Huxterby, I hope that when them white babies grow up, the men's can marry the women's so that they don't have to go out and marry a crow or a beaver or a otter or none of the other beasts of the field. I don't want to be sleeping with no cow. There's a lot of people out there that, and I hesitate to use the word thinking, but that there's a lot of people out there who cogitate that way. Let's not use the word think. There are a lot of people out there who are in John Gibson's camp. There are a lot of people out there who, for reasons that I can't fathom, are positively convinced that if Fred and Steve are able to pick out a China pattern at Macy's, that it means that Emery's going to have to walk into Eileen and say, "Honey, it's all over for us. I'm going out and getting me one of them gay marriages." And then where will the white women be? And how will we get any little white babies? Poor little white babies. Well, not all little white babies are poor little white babies. This bears mentioning. I got this via email from our moderator in the chat room, ELO. Headline: Katrina rescued embryo baby turns one. Underneath the photo, the caption: Rebecca Markham, holds six-month-old Noah and poses for Noah. They named the baby Noah. Ain't that cute? This is the embryo who was rescued from a private for-pay hospital fertility clinic in New Orleans, rescued by elements of, I think, state law enforcement and rescue agents from Louisiana and Illinois in a rowboat during the worst flooding of Katrina. Mm-hmm. These embryos were rescued over, you know, rescuing real people. Dateline New Orleans, Associated Press. Once a frozen embryo threatened by Hurricane Katrina. I don't think an embryo can be threatened. Little Noah Markham, named for the survivor of the biblical flood of all floods, celebrated his first birthday Wednesday, yesterday. His birth, which attracted cameras and reporters within an hour, is still a story his parents find themselves telling frequently. If I was his parents, I wouldn't have the nerve to tell that story frequently, knowing that they had saved an embryo and diverted resources to save that embryo that could have gone to saving real suffering humanity. But she's a white woman having babies! Somebody tell John Gibson! My neighbor proclaims it every time we go somewhere. Did you see this little baby on the news? His mother, Rebecca Markham, said. She and her husband, Glenn, a New Orleans police officer, it was Glenn who diverted the resources to the salvation of the embryo, planned a small family gathering Wednesday evening to mark the anniversary of Noah's arrival, which made headlines worldwide. While Noah's birth may have gotten attention, he's no prima donna, his mother says. His older brother, Whit. Whit and Noah, yeah. No, we couldn't come up with a biblical name for Whit. We was just hoping by naming him Whit that he'd have some. Whit has always demanded attention. But Noah's very happy just watching Whit. Or if I give him a toy or even a spoon to play with. You know, when I was growing up, we played with chicken bones. That's how poor we were. His favorite toy is a spoon. When he gets a little bit older, I'm going to give him a circular saw and plug it in. The boy's embryos were among several created at the same time in 2003, using Rebecca's eggs and Glenn's sperm. Oh, how charming. It's the union of one sperm and one egg. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus. In a fertility lab not far from their home in Covington, across Lake Pontchartrain in from New Orleans, Wint's embryo was implanted immediately in Rebecca Markham's womb, and he was born in 2004. Five other embryos, included Noah's, were among about 1,400, which the Fertility Institute of New Orleans had stored at a hospital that flooded when Hurricane Katrina hit on August 29, 2005. You are there! With power out and the city sweltering in the days after the storm, authorities used flatboats for a water... Lying bastards in the journalism industry! Authorities. No! Glenn Markham, a New Orleans police officer, commandeered some other law enforcement rescue officers, put them in a boat and said, "Come on, we gotta save the snowflakes!" With power out and the city sweltering in the days after the storm, authorities used flatboats for a water rescue of the canisters holding the embryos. Come on! Rest of the sentence! While other suffering human beings died. The embryo that became Noah was defrosted and implanted into his mother's womb in May 2006. He was among the eight babies delivered from 59 frozen embryos implanted that year at the same clinic. Of the clinic's 1,750 frozen embryos, all but 350 were at the hospital that flooded. Oh, my God, what about the other embryos? What happened to them? Did they get the toilet treatment? Sure, celebrate the birthday of little Noah Markham, but what about the ones that didn't make it? Strangers often remark that the little redheads could almost be twins. That lets the Markhams explain that they are, in a way, conceived at the same time but born 2.5 years apart. Although one defrosted at the same time as Noah's didn't survive overnight, the Markhams still have 3 embryos frozen. So there's likely to be a third little Markham. What about the other two? Come on! You'd kind of like to know, just for the sake of remembrance, who died for those embryos. Just so that you could say that someone on planet Earth remembered that there were real, live human beings alive on the face of the planet in the midst of that hell and that misery, whose lives had value, whose lives had real worth, but who were executed as a result of the negligence, the willful, wanton, and gross conduct of Glenn Markham and his white wife. Save our little white embryo, Glenn. Never mind them drowning brown people. Get the embryos. Glenn, get the embryos. Jesus, please. So, you know, it's all, I know you don't think so, but it does. It all fits together. Because after all, Rebecca Markham was one of those breeding white women that John Gibson was so all fired proud of. Not mentioned. Not worthy of mention. A child baking in an attic, whose skin happened to be the wrong color. Not worthy of mention. An 80-year-old African-American grandmother, who floated face down in the stinking, fetid floodwaters. Who had survived racism, who had survived a depression, who had survived a world war, who had survived everything but the pure, unmitigated, hateful negligence of a Republican presidential administration that didn't give a rat's ass whether she lived or died. Rebecca Markham can't be bothered to remember those who died so her embryo could live. No. No. So it falls, I'm afraid. It falls, I'm afraid, to you to do the remembering. Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
the welfare. Every month a report. Some of the things they'll say to you. Not sure to get your goat. Well, you tell them you're sick. You better have a bad cough. Because if you don't, well, that's just a way to dissolve you all. What you gonna do when the welfare turns its back on you? You'll be standing around, standing well. Ain't a thing that you can do.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Remembering is really all we can do. No, it's not all we can do. There's plenty more we can do, but it's the least we can do. Isn't it? It's worth remembering the people who died so little Noah Markham could get, Noah could get carried across the waters to be saved so he could help populate white America. Let's go to the phones. We are joined, we're joined by our good friend Kate. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Nice funky blues you got there, Guy.
Well, thank you very kindly.
I just couldn't resist calling in. I wanted to remember the little baby that was born right after the storm, little white boy in Pascagoula, and they brought him home, and he couldn't live in the FEMA trailer because of the allergies to the trailer, and so he lived with his grandma in Pascagoula. And he's still there because they are still in the FEMA trailer. And to move him now would be, he's calling his grandpa daddy and his grandma mama. And the family's real freaked out about bringing him home because that's the only home he's ever known. And so their family's still living in the FEMA trailer. And I got a call about daddy this morning, and he's all mad and throwing a fit and swearing and cussing, and I said, well, that's just indicative of the domestic situation that's getting out of control. You know, they're just another casualty of, they didn't get drowned, but their family's dying, you know. And then the thing about the vets, that the misappropriation of funds for the veterans, the VA, or whatever that was this morning, I heard it walking through the living room. There's a vet sitting in a FEMA trailer with two great big teenage sons that's still in a FEMA trailer after 2.5 years and in a wheelchair, and the VA's not doing anything, and he can't. Oh,
well, you got to understand, Ms. Kate, that government can't do anything because government is unable to meet the needs of the people. That's why the private sector. Oh, see, I hate myself for doing that crap.
That's why the what?
That's why the private sector needs to. No, you know how it works.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know the drill.
Yeah, I do. A little too well, I'm afraid. I had to drag up from Jackson County for a while and head north because I just can't. Oh, I'm starting to get critical and judgmental and profane, and I thought.
And frankly, it's good that you do, because if the people who are trying to help can't. You're not any help if you get destroyed in the process.
That's right. So I thought I'd pull out and wait till Ann comes down, and then go down and raise some hell with her for 2 weeks and do some research. And you know, I'm just a damn radical. I don't, you know, nobody gets along with me, and I don't get along with nobody because I just call crap where I see it, and then they look at me like, oh no, you know, that's not true. That's the old South. You know, I say, yes, yes.
Now, when we're saving white embryos while little living African American children and adults and grandmas and granddaddies die, that ain't the old South. That's the right here, right now South.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd head just a little bit north, and I'll be like in South Tennessee. I'm still in the South, But I just wanted to call in and say, yeah, there's a little Reese needs to be remembered, and Brother Dave needs to be remembered in his wheelchair. He's so depressed he can't even hardly roll his chair anymore. And so, you know, I did all I could and for both of them, and then I just had to leave and let the agencies take over that I plugged them into again. You know, I've been working with Reese's mom and dad since last winter, and they're still in that same damn FEMA trailer. And, oh, God. So anyway, I just had to leave, but I just wanted to thank you for bringing that story up, because it just feels like the Gulf Coast is getting forgotten all the time, and, you know, people just are always...
Actually, it's worse than that, Kate. It would take some level of cerebral effort to forget the Gulf Coast.
Well, a lot of people...
It's worse than that. It didn't even register. You know, the further we get away from Katrina, Kate, the more important it becomes to look back and analyze how the information on Katrina was handled, because there are millions of Americans that you can say Katrina to, and the first thing they say is, well, why didn't they ride their buses out of there instead of sitting there and drowning?
Mm-hmm. And I think probably the picture that everybody has in their mind when you say Katrina are overweight black women sitting on the curb in piles of garbage with little kids running around screaming.
Well, ain't that what it was?
I reckon. I wasn't there.
And that's not an image. That's reality. To millions and millions of Americans, that is reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some of the black women are still sitting on the stoop of the FEMA trailer with garbage piled around because nobody's coming to pick it up, because Moss Point, Mississippi don't have an infrastructure in their little town, and they've got a mayor from Chicago and he don't do nothing. And
yeah, but by God, if she was to put that garbage in a pile and light it on fire, there'd be a response then.
I called the city of Moss Point and said there's a big garbage pile over on Orange Grove Road and probably it needs to be picked up, because I was talking to some folks the other day and they said, oh, Miss Kate, don't worry about it. We're just going to set fire to it. And the lady said, oh, I'll get a work order on that right away. And I drove by it today on the way out to the freeway and the garbage is still there. Mm-mm-mm. I should have went and set fire to it myself, but anyway. So.
Well, if you hadn't have got out, you probably would have got around to it.
Yeah, it was getting to that. I got to set a fire under something.
I'm so pissed off. I'm going to burn me something.
It's either going to be a governor or a pile of garbage in Moss Point. But on the good
same
side,
difference.
Oh, I didn't say that. I try to not denigrate his name, that poor boy. He just gets it from everybody.
Yeah, don't be so rough on the damn garbage, Kate.
On a lighter note, or a more positive note, the women I was talking about getting women in construction and doing the, you know, the rabble rousing and the gathering folks together. We had 12 people in the room the other night. They have all come together. There's one woman who is extremely skilled and self-taught out of the Home Depot 1-2-3 construction book, and she's taught herself everything, and she's willing to teach. Tuesday night they're hanging a fan in a grandma's house and wiring it up, and there were 12 women in the room, and that was only about a third of the people who were interested, and they named themselves a few good women, and they are hot to go, and so there you go. But I said, and I made a point that I'm not in this. I just called you all together because I just wanted to see the village come together and join hands and fix your houses yourself, because you died of waiting on him. And half of them had husbands, and they said, mm-hmm. So they're going to wait till the husband's not there, and then they're going to wire the fan up and turn it on, and there you go. So we got a few good women going on in Moss Point, Mississippi, and I said, I'm afraid this is going to start something way bigger. There's going to be some sisters that say, well, there were two in there that said, well, I want to work in construction. I don't want to work anymore what I'm doing. Popeye's chicken place, you know. She said, I want to be a contractor. Mm-mm-mm. So we started a big mess.
Good, good. Hope it gets bigger.
Lit a fire under something, and I just lit the fire and then drug up. That's what I do. I'm a grassroots startup operator. So
no, you are an outside agitator.
I sure am. That's what I told him right off the top. I talk funny. I have a foreign accent, and I'm sorry, but I just see a need here, and it was Sister Diane, the village queen, that started all this when she said, we should have done this a year ago. Everybody's sitting around waiting on somebody else, and I said, that's what started it. I went home to Arizona and thought about it for 6 months and come back and said, made some phone calls and said, here you all are, and that's what I have to say. So, you know, what do you want to do? And first you got to name yourselves, and they come up with a few good women, and I said, well, that'll work for me. I'm out of here, so that we just got it going on. So I did light a fire, so I didn't. I'm glad I called in because I didn't realize that. I set fire to something. So anyway, it's good to hear you talk about the effort down there and remembering the Markham baby, bless his heart, little red-headed baby.
Little blessed red-headed white baby.
Those redheads, you got to watch out for them.
Oh,
I'm
mercy.
Out of here.
Go ahead.
Hmm?
No, please.
My love to everybody, and I've just had a seriously good trip with Jimmy Buffett all the way up the road, and so I got to head on, so I got to get out of here. So anyway, the break is over. My battery will probably run down on my computer, and I'm out of here, so y'all take care.
All right, you too, Kate.
I'll probably be on the porch tomorrow night, but at least I'll be listening.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks for taking the call. Bye.
I wait all night for calls like these.
I know.
Bye now. We've got a little code thing going on, Kate and me. Lyrics from Donald Fagen's The Night Fly. And onward, the world's most brilliant, Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, joins us now. Hey, Eugene, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
I'm glad to be here. And, you know, I may be the Internet's most brilliant satirist, but if only I were as erotic as John Gibson.
I tell you, a little bit. Like I said, that peanut butter, Agnes is in trouble.
I mean, the man, it's interesting, he's proclaiming himself a national aphrodisiac. I don't really think he is that inspiring. I mean, his overbite could double as a codpiece.
Yeah, well, look, okay, first of all, Eugene...
I don't know what his sex life is like. I'm not sure.
Don't want to know? Well, we've seen The Offspring. I think it involved a badger.
Actually, ironically, I just came from the dentist, and my wife was disappointed that I didn't have any cavities. If anyone deserves them, I do. If there were any justice in the world, I'd be toothless and 300 pounds. Of course, if there were any justice in the world, I'd be printed as a Yorker, so, you know. My Reverend Huxtable's God has decided I would not look better than I deserve and be punished in other ways.
Well, Eugene, by the way, I mentioned this a couple of nights ago. Maybe it was last night. I think it was last night. Got to get you on board the program here. Henceforward, the Head On Radio Network style manual dictates that we always refer to Mike Huckabee as radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee.
Not right-wing as opposed to spelled R-I-T-E?
No. Just radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. Because, you know, the people over in the Middle East that he shares more common ground with than he does with normal people in America, they're always referred to as radical fundamentalist clerics.
Couldn't we just call him Ayatollah? It's easier to say.
You know...
And it also lends itself... It even sounds Southern. Ayatollah.
Ayatollah Huckabee.
Mm-hmm. Ayatollah Huckabee. God, I'm rather good at this.
Yeah, far too good for your own good. Don't let the wife hear you talking that way. She may get the peanut butter and come a running.
Or start worrying that I'll date her sister too.
Jesus, don't.
Not really, since I call her Mussolini to her face. It's not really. It's almost as you know, as arousing as you know John Gibson telling you to have sex.
Man, that's starchy Mussolini.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I was defending her once, because another person said she's a regular Hitler, and I stood up for my sister-in-law saying, oh, no, she's much more like Mussolini.
And you even got the gender ending right on the end of it. That's beautiful.
Well, you know, least I can do. But, you know, the thing about John Gibson's insistence that white women breed... it undercuts, really, the only viable economic
market we could have in, reversing our, trade deficit with China, which would be exporting white women there.
Ooh, white slavery.
Well, Britain did very well forcing the Chinese to take opium in the 19th century. Now, we can't force, white women on them, but we can still try offering them. China, remember, does have a sex imbalance. I mean, the fact that they used to drown their, female infants, and since they're not Christian, that doesn't count.
Right. Good that you're keeping score.
There is now a trade. There is a deficit. We can offer white women. I mean, I think that's actually the only.
Well, I think we're building something here, Eugene. I think we got a plan going because we can do the 21st century equivalent of the British opium trade. We can offer them our white women and OxyContin.
All right, we're still good with it. Well, they can. They can always do the drugs themselves cheaper. They can't make white women cheaper unless they start importing from Albania.
And
I said that. Now I've just blown that economics. Mitt Romney, Willard Romney will never forgive me now. That was our only hope of getting Michigan viable again.
Importing Albanians?
Well, no. I mean, we have to import our white women, or export our white women cheaper than Albania could. But Albania doesn't have the transportation system we have, so we can still compete with them. But no, white women are the only possible export we really have left.
And
so, I'm assuming there's a market for them.
I'm trying to come up with the acronym for the white women Chinese free trade agreement, but I'm not working so well on the fly tonight.
Let's see if we NAGTA, if they're bitchy.
Oh, NAGTA. That's okay. Okay. You know, we're gonna get in real trouble here, you and me, Eugene. People are gonna think that we're right wing misogynistic. But no.
Why don't I defect to the right wing? They pay so much better. In fact, that's why I'm going to attack you for attacking the bubonic plague. Consider this my audition for Fox.
Okay.
The bubonic plague was just a liberal conspiracy. Because look at what it did. I mean, first off, it actually, in a way, it was the free market in all its benefits. I mean, it created an economic boom. Because if you can't increase the amount of money, just decrease the amount of people.
And the money gravitates toward other money.
Well, I mean, people had more money once the population was dead. The next thing you knew, you had a renaissance. You think that was a coincidence?
Oh, true. And
Roberto and Gino could suddenly spend it on not in my case, a cathedral, but you could have.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because the Black Plague was kind of rough on you guys.
Well, somebody had to be blamed, and, people didn't realize, you might inadvertently be killing William Crystal's ancestors.
Now, see, don't take me there.
Yeah, all right. Well, believe me, if they had limited to neoconservatives, I'd be helping to organize the pogrom.
I mean, I've heard a lot through the years about, traditional Jewish guilt. What does the membership list, the roles of the Project for a New American Century do for that, Eugene?
Well, I refer to them as Uncle Talmuds. Starting off with Michael Medved is the only one who actually wants to be hanging from Mel Gibson's Christmas tree. Most of the others at least draw the line at just groveling.
But, I mean, where Pearl and... Abramoff and what's his name with the
Horowitz,
Wolfowitz and
Crystal fight. I know.
That calls for like davening till you got a bruise on your forehead.
Well, that is popular with another Semitic religion.
It's amazing. What did they call that? The Peking butterfly effect, Eugene. Where you have no idea what one tiny little event, maybe it was during the Black Plague and they got the wrong family. And if they'd gotten the right family, we don't have William Crystal today.
Well, whoever said anti-Semites had good taste, with the possible exception of T.S. Eliot.
So, you know, I mean, it's a fine little line to tread, but Lord, no, you're right about the bubonic plague.
It did help foster the Renaissance in terms of economics, and actually in England it abolished serfdom simply because, I mean, talk about, you know, the free market in action. I mean, yes, it wiped out in some parts of the country half the population, but also if you were the half that survived, you also realized that your luck extended to supply and demand.
And collective, and early instances of collective bargaining, right?
Well, if you call a, you know, peasant uprising collective bargaining, yes. I mean, if the supply of labor was limited, it could exact greater demands from the nobility. I mean, you know, the peasants could demand to be treated as well as the livestock. I mean, you could even ask for the end of serfdom. You know, now, if you recall your English history, the nobility tried resisting but couldn't handle it. Tried imposing the legal shackles on the peasantry, but they didn't have the force to.
Because at the end of the day, the peasantry gets to go, fine, you bring in the crops.
Exactly. You know, why don't I just walk off to London where you'll never find me? And so, you know, for all practical purposes, you know, there was never any legislation that actually said serfdom is through in England, and, you know, but by, you know, it just withered away as a result of the bubonic plague. Now, it's interesting it didn't happen elsewhere in the same way, but, and indeed, serfdom lasted, you know, into the 19th century throughout much of Europe, 18th and 19th century, but in England, the bubonic plague helped end it. You know, one of those ironies, you know,
I'm trying to think,
in the black boil.
Yeah. I think it was Barbara Tuchman who wrote a book about that era that did some brilliant examination. A Distant Mirror, that's exactly it. Yeah, I read it several years ago, and it made an impact on me. But, you know, it engendered a death cult.
Yes, in art, very much so.
And, you know, all the skulls and the dancing skeletons and some of the creepy stuff that you see on cathedrals are all an outgrowth.
And you know, on top of, sepulchres, you know, and, you know, they would often have how the person looked at his best in life and next to him how he looked, you know, after sufficient decay. You know, just letting you know that, you know, mortality is fleeting while death is rather a permanent condition.
Yeah, and no one here, as Jim Morrison said, no one here gets out alive.
Exactly.
So, okay, I'll take back some of my reference to the plague, but still, you got the general thrust, right?
Well, yes, of course.
Because
I'm slightly subversive doesn't mean I don't listen to you.
And of course, my next question, my real question for John Gibson is, crunchy or smooth? The peanut butter on the leather seats where babies come from. I mean, is that what that is in the crunchy peanut butter? Are those embryos?
I never really thought of that, but why a BMW? Isn't that un-American, literally? If he wants American babies, have them in American cars.
Well, at least you got room for the birthing if you've got a Hummer.
There's a pun there, but somehow I don't want to go beyond that. Go there.
Yeah. Well, see, I was. Hey, you can't blame me for not throwing the setup to you, Eugene.
Yeah, but you know, I don't work dirty. What can I say?
I don't work blue.
You know, it's our friend Merritt once was promoting me to, you know, by saying, and you know, he's very funny, and surprisingly, he's clean. So
barring the occasional double entendre or such as that.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I do syphilis jokes, but you know.
Yeah, but which, by the way, syphilis was in the news in the last week or so.
Yes, it was. You know, they've actually, you know, confirmed what had long been the general suspicion that it did indeed come from the New World, and it apparently was just a mutated case of yaws.
And who brought it?
Well, Columbus, of course. You know, the great trade. We'll give you syphilis, and you give us smallpox. I mean, those Indians really knew, Native Americans really knew how to...
Yeah,
you. Great bargain.
You may kill off 90% of our population in the next 10 years, but we're going to screw up your royal houses for generations.
Well, they were doing that just by marrying each other. And ironically, the place where it was the most, self-destructive was in the Spanish royal family. where by the end of the Spanish Habsburg, you literally had a drooling cretin on the throne.
Yes.
More drooling and more cretinous than usual.
Sort of makes you, you know, every now and then one of those stories will come out all about how George Bush is related to the English nobility. We got to get him back to the Habsburgs, though, because that's what makes sense.
Well, remember, the Habsburgs are Catholic, therefore we can't have them. No, he's probably descended from Henry I, who had 21 children, only two with his wife. So odds are, you know, every person in England is descended from, you know, every white person in England is descended from Henry I. Just mathematical probability.
I just love the way with that little Chicago accent that you have, that you say white.
Yeah, that's a Chicago accent, all right.
Yeah, yeah, South Chicago.
Yeah, actually, I was from the north side. But Rogers Park, not that it would mean much to you, but it's, you know, just south of Evanston, and it was a little Jewish area. You know, you could have seen it yesterday on public television, or when they were referring to Jewish enclaves.
Couple of nice delis?
We had delis. In fact, I was in my old neighborhood just today, and I bought a quarter pound of corned beef and a quarter pound of tongue.
Oh,
more. I would
oh,
more
be still my house. Heart. Oh, tongue. Oh.
Well, my wife, you know, I mean, I think my wife would prefer I brought heroin to the house. She just abhors the idea of, you know. But the corned beef is no problem.
You know what? Any leftover tongue you can just ship down. You know, pack it on ice. It's dead of winter. We'll be all
there
right.
Corned beef. Oh, I said I could only afford. Do you know it costs $19 a pound?
Jeebony!
I was amazed, but since this was the first time I'd had it in so many. Remember, we're only talking about the meat.
Yes.
I can't remember. Probably 15 years. And even though
the last I had of it was in a little Mexican restaurant down in Alabama.
Well, you know, the Mexicans eat it too. You're absolutely right. And I don't think it's Sephardic influence. Lingua.
Yeah, exactly. And because I walked into the Mexican restaurant and I said, they brought me the menu and I just looked at the waiter and I said, you know, and made sure that we were both working, you know, I was working my pigeon Spanish and he was working his pigeon English, and we worked out a sort of a middle of the road pigeon Spanglish, and I said, you know, feed me what you guys like. And so this beautiful bowl of soup comes out, and then this beautiful tortilla wrapped thing, and he points at the board and goes, lingua. And I went, yes. And it was delicious. And the menudo wasn't bad either. But, you know, the tripe does take some getting used to, I got to confess.
Oh, I don't think it's that bad.
No, it's just, it's more conceptual.
Yeah, you've got a point there. You know, if you think about it, but if you think about almost anything you eat, you know, whether it's, gee, look at that nice fertilizer on the vegetables.
Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, exactly. And that's, you know, that's why I'm so militant about getting a garden going this year, Eugene. I'm gonna have tomatoes that I have absolutely supervised their entire life cycle, and I'm gonna know everything that goes on them, everything that goes in them, and I'm gonna be such a happy boy.
What about critters? Do you have problems with, you know?
Oh yeah, we've got a deer interstate that runs right through the side of my backyard. Although the deer apparently aren't the sharpest ungulates on the tundra, and I've found that if I just plant about 20 feet away from where they come out of the woods, they don't know it's there. Now, if I plant down the strip that they walk through, I never knew them to do this before. I saw deer. We had deer take down 108 various and sundry different, you know, smoking hot chili pepper plants.
They could handle that?
Oh gosh, yes. And I mean, they ate it like, it was like having jerky on the hoof. I figure. Took down 108. Chili pepper plants and 152 tomato plants just gone.
Oh God, my wife will organize a memorial service for your garden. She's complaining about the casualties we have from squirrels and rabbits.
But you know, a deer will browse anything, and if they like it, you're done. But I have found that if I plant 20 feet off the side of the road, so to speak, they leave it alone. But I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to trust it to chance. I'm going. John Fox will be so proud of me. I'm going green, and we're putting up a solar electric fence. And now we're back to peanut butter again, because yeah. What you do is you put up your electric fence, and then before you put the juice to it, you slather the wire with peanut butter, and then you put the power to it.
A strip of tin foil with the peanut butter. My mother-in-law, alias Our Lady of Radcliffe, uses that to protect her rose garden.
Because they can't resist it, and they come in, and they go after the peanut butter once, and they never again. Because, you know, speaking of tongue, you get a little 110 through the tongue, and, you know, suddenly, even if it is peanut butter, which is apparently the universal everything on earth loves it substance, no, they'll leave it be, and they won't jump the fence, they won't get near the fence. The only trick is you've got to put some on the low strand too for the rabbits and the small verminous rodents.
Oh, I didn't know that rabbits like peanut butter. That's surprising.
Everything likes peanut butter. You know, peanut butter is what everything likes, and everything that isn't beef or pork tastes like chicken. You know, there's a universal balance in all things, Eugene.
We may have created a new religion.
Fine by me. I mean, especially if we're going to pass an offering plate.
Or at least put peanut butter on the communion wafers. This is my body wheat, and here's a nice source of protein to go with it.
and my blood has antioxidant properties.
Oh, I should hope so. That's right. God. Anyway, this is. So we've gone from the bubonic plague, the Spanish Habsburgs, to how to keep Spanish Habsburgs from nibbling hot chili peppers in your garden.
You know, I'd say we've done a pretty good night's work, Eugene.
Yes, we have.
Always good to hear from you. Is your RDA of irony cruising along nicely?
Well, today, because I really was spending a lot of time at the dentist and errands, I was, you know...
You played hooky.
I'm missing a day.
Yeah.
So I apologize to my literally dozens of readers, and to you especially. And so, you know, leaving you, you know, bereft of any subject except John's, you know, Gibson's sex life. And
oh, you only think that's all I had. I'm loaded for bear tonight, Eugene.
Well, I'm glad to that. I'm looking forward to hearing the rest. I should mention, however, you know, again, that my wife was disappointed that I. This was my new dentist. I've been to my previous dentist for 47 years, and he finally retired. And it's amazing he could afford to retire because, you know, as I said, in my 55 years, I've only had one cavity.
You know, it's right. I'm surprised he didn't just go out of business, you know, 20 years ago. Yeah, just give up. Go on. Yeah. You know, thank God there are other people out there.
History to me, so I mean, he just hung around for that. You know, once or twice a year, I'd give him a reason to, you know.
So you got the new guy, and you got into the chair, and he didn't walk up to you and say, "Is it safe?"
You know, we never discussed that film, and ironically, with my new dentist, I did.
I think it has to. I mean, for anybody who is familiar with Marathon Man. I had the misfortune of seeing that film at a very early age, and it had a real negative impact on me. So that you know, just about every new dentist I've ever gone to, I engaged that conversation. You ever seen Marathon Man?
Well, of course.
And inevitably, I think they make them watch a screening of it in dental school or something, Eugene, because they go, "Yes, I've seen Marathon Man. Yes, it's safe. I hate that movie." And we go for it. Now, if you want to give him a giggle, though, if you want to give him a giggle, and I know you are a film fan, and I've mentioned this movie a few times on the air, I highly recommend to you becoming the proud owner of the original 1978 version with Alan Arkin and Peter Falk of The In-Laws.
Oh, that show is hilarious.
The scene where Alan Arkin is being advised by one of his patients to call off the wedding. You haven't met the parents? you call off the wedding. If you haven't met the parents, you can't have the wedding. Now, this is not 19th century Minsk.
Mm-hmm.
That and when he looks in horror at Vince as portrayed by Peter Falk and says, Mrs. Edelman cannot close her mouth, you know, because she's got the form thing stuck glued up into her face, and she's just sitting in the chair going and he understands every, because he's a dentist and he understands mouthful speak, he understands every word that she said. Wonderful movie.
That's a very funny film.
One of the great underappreciated films of all time, I think.
I mean, the problem is it was remade and it was not a comedy, but, you know, just a travesty.
Oh, what a nightmare that was. And you know,
that's,
I was...
the problem. Every time I see a good movie now on Turner Classic Movies, I'm panicking. How are they going to ruin it in the remake?
And, you know, Albert Brooks was in the remake of The In-Laws. And I generally credit Albert Brooks with some common good sense, Eugene.
But this was not his movie. This was just his paycheck.
Well, okay. If he didn't have any... Yeah, I always assume there's some level of creative input on the part of Albert Brooks. But, you know, if not, that explains everything, because that thing was
just... for the money.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, his films don't make that much money.
Right. But, you know, God, Searching for Comedy in the Muslim World, did you ever see that?
No.
Oh,
disappointing.
It is, and it's not. He's working with a tough medium.
Definitely.
And
deadly audience.
Yeah, there was some. You know what it was? It was a reverse precursor to Borat.
Hmm.
How's that for obscure?
That's interesting.
Sometimes I don't even want to know what makes my mind go where my mind goes. But come to think of it, yeah, it really is.
Yes, actually, it is. I can see that. The problem with Borat, I was feeling sorry for his victims.
Oh, you know, the outtakes. He came here to the county where I live, and expecting to find, you know, ignorant anti-Semitic rednecks, and he went to try to adopt a dog at our local pound. And the lady who runs the shelter is just a sweet, sweet human being. And when he said, when he sets the, it's an outtake, and you can find it on YouTube, but he sets the dog down at the end of the hallway, and then he stands at the other end and says, get the Jew. And she comes back at him and says something like, you shouldn't be saying things like that. Our Lord was a Jew. And I think Sacha Baron Cohen was actually you can see sort of a little ruffle of the curtain that is Borat, and he's taken aback by the decency of this person, and he tries to regather it by saying, okay, so I can adopt a puppy and then we go have sexy time, at which point she just takes the puppy away from him and says, you ain't having sex with none of my dogs, and walks through the door and just leaves him standing there.
Mm. Good for her.
But, yeah, you did for some of his victims, with the exception of a few. There's some it was hard to have. You just couldn't have any sympathy for.
I mean, you know, here I actually will start sounding like a Republican, but, you know, I mean, we don't have enough smarmy Ivy Leaguers. Now we have to literally import them from the original Cambridge. Oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
It's a sad world where, in effect, you know, the choice between the drooling cretins of the right and these unbearable asses of the left. I mean, there really has to be a middle ground between, you know, the Neanderthals and the New York Times feature staff.
Well, as I've always said, Eugene, we are trapped in a battle between taste great and less filling, and we're the normal people are in the middle, and we're the ones that are going to take the beating.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if you've seen yet the appearance of Jonah Goldberg on The Daily Show.
I refuse to watch it. I can't stand him, and I...
Trying to explain that Hitler was a liberal. He's got a book out, Eugene, a book.
I would gladly let Hitler be as liberal on him as he wanted to be.
The book has a red cover and a yellow Walmart smiley face with a Hitler mustache.
I've seen the cover, you know. But I mean, right now Stewart is desperate because all he can get are fascists because, you know, liberals will not cross the picket line.
Right, and interestingly enough, Matt Boers and Ted Rall, two cartoonists out there, decided that Colbert and Stewart have been getting too much of a pass when, in fact, you know, they crossed the picket line. They don't have an agreement with their writers.
Right, that's true.
It's not like Letterman who, you know, who reached an agreement and moved on. They just crossed the picket line, pure and simple.
Yeah.
And so Colbert and Stewart both got blistered in a sort of a 1-2 punch between these two guys. Ted Rawls' comics are easily found, and Matt Bohr's comic on Stephen Colbert is at Matt Bohr's, MattBors.com. And you know, I looked at those things with some trepidation because it was like, you know, I want to root for Stewart, but you know, what was he thinking?
Well, I just won't even, you know, I just wouldn't watch that segment. I mean, you know, I watched the first two-thirds of it, and then I literally skipped over, you know, turned it off and fast-forwarded to where Colbert would be, because I won't watch Goldberg. I won't read him in the Chicago Tribulation. I won't watch him on television. I've seen him enough that I know that, you know, he is repulsive. Individual, and his views are, you know, absurd.
But a little cultural moment, though, if you please, Eugene. It's something that I find myself coming back to on a fairly frequent basis, because on the one hand, we can talk about these horrors, these right-wing horrors that we see every day, but try, you know, what I mentioned talking to Kate about the way that millions of Americans view the Katrina disaster, that is that, you know, message management made it such that there is a permanently emplaced image of, you know, fat African American people unwilling to get on to so much as get on a bus and get out of town. That was created, and it's in people's minds. And I mean, you live in a very populous area. Do you ever go down the street and just kind of look at people and go, I wonder if that's a weirdo. I wonder if that's a weirdo. Do you see what I'm getting at? I mean, people are buying this stupid book by Jonah Goldberg, Eugene.
Well, no one I know.
But you know,
yeah,
April 20th is coming, so I'm sure it will have some Hitler's birthday observance value.
I mean, it just, you know, why, you know, Stewart would stoop to that.
But just turning, yeah, but turning history on its head and getting away with it. Whether it's
a big lie, you know, you just say these preposterous, absurd, vile things, say them often enough, and some people will believe you. You know, and, even people, you know, giving them I suppose you could make the argument, well, we have to give them a forum, so how can we, you know, so we can refute them. But are you refuting them?
No, because John Stewart just looked at him and said, you know, you're insane. And he said, you know, how is...
So the audience laughs and then ignores it. I mean, the only thing
And it reminds me of that old line, the condemned...
Most of the Stewart audience would not agree with, you know... the Goldberg's contention that the fascists were liberals.
But see, that's even not original. I mean, I've been doing this long enough that I remember being on the air in, you know, the world, America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, and having people call up and said, you keep saying that Hitler was a right wing and he was like a Republican, but Nazism was National Socialist, Bob. They were socialists just like you are. And that was 4 years ago. And he's just now coming out with this book. That's a meme that sort of boils in the undercurrent of the American right-wing psyche that, oh, no, we're not really fascists. They are.
You could make the argument that Mussolini, being Italian, ate wine and cheese, and those Manhattan liberals eat wine and cheese, so there's the link.
And that's the kind of links that he makes in this book.
Jonah Goldberg's a New York luxury condo, so he probably eats wine and cheese too.
But
makes him a liberal.
Does Jonah Goldberg? But does Jonah Goldberg not understand that the ovens will be heated up for him too? That there's a place in Guantanamo for him.
If he were really if he ever left his little neocon cabal. You know, and found himself with real Republicans, he'd have the unique discovery of having them line dance on his face.
Yeah, while playing the Panzerlied.
Mm-hmm. Catchy tune, I have to give it that.
Well, you know, bless your heart for posting it on your website one night.
Well, it was in regards to, what would be a great, Mercedes-Benz commercial.
Did you grab that from the original soundtrack of Battle of the Bulge? It sounds
It was recycled from YouTube.
Okay, because it sounded for all the world exactly.
I'm sure.
Eugene?
I'm sure it was.
Oh, okay, there you go. Yeah, they had a lovely chorus. I've never heard better singing tank drivers.
It is rare, and it was, if only they had MTV in the late 60s.
Yeah.
You could just have, Robert Shaw could have been had a number one hit.
Such a delightful Nazi he made, as well as, such a wide spectrum of acting talent, from Nazi tank commander to up east fishing boat captain.
Quint. Oh yeah, he was. He was a award winning playwright.
Yes, that's true.
The Man in the Glass Booth was his work. So, he was a very accomplished man. He was a versatile actor. My first impression of him was as, I think, Red Grant in From Russia with Love.
Yeah, oh, I'd forgotten about that.
Oh, how can you, And also, a few years later, he was a physically accurate Henry VIII. We always think of Henry VIII as this fat, grotesquely, bloated, gout-stricken, syphilitic old man, or, Charles Laughton on a good day. In fact, until his 40s, Henry was considered a handsome man, and not just by your court sycophants.
No, he was taller than usual, quite the dancer, not a bad composer, literally a Renaissance man.
And he was good-looking. His mother was a beauty. His grandparents were, on his mother's side, were two of the best-looking people in England, Edward IV and Elizabeth Woodville. So, he had good-looking genes. His younger sister, Mary, was considered a beauty. His older sister, unfortunately, looked like the father's side of the family, and that's from the current royal family is descended.
Yeah, it looked like they'd been hit with a cricket bat, sure.
Well, look like a parsimonious Welsh, a sadistic Welsh schoolmaster, if you ever look at Henry VII's face. Which actually was a pretty accurate description of his background. But here you see this robust, attractive, man, trying to intimidate Paul Scofield.
True.
Anyway,
well, this has sure been fun, Eugene. Don't be such a stranger, okay?
Leaping from tangent to tangent with.
Yeah, but it's the ability to do so, man. It's not everybody that can get up on this trapeze and play without a net.
And doing it with in a straitjacket yet.
Take care and give our best to your lovely wife, and let's hope that we haven't gotten you in any more trouble. But yeah, if she wants to do a memorial for my 200 gone plants from a couple of years back, and curse the deer or something, that'll be fine by me.
If you ever want to have a gardening show, I'll get her on the air.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. We've got room on the weekend schedule.
Well,
gardening with Karen. And, with some natural sound from the background of Eugene pulling weeds and pulling his back.
Well, there's no question, I'm the...
Because you are the help, right?
I'm the beast of burden. There's no question about that.
Yeah. Well, Eugene, our best, and me and that mouse in my pocket. No, I know that you've gained a few subscribers through the network here. And
yes, thank you very much.
I always get a kick out of everything you do. Act one of the debate yesterday just kind of destroyed me for about 15 minutes, and I couldn't do anything, couldn't write a response or anything until I'd settled down.
With, the God, President God, because I was half thinking of rewriting the Bill of Rights, spelled R-I-T-E-S, as how he would do it. I discovered someone else has done that on Kaz, so I was too late.
Well, please.
Mine would have been funnier, but big deal.
Don't go over ground that's already been plowed on cost, because they will eat you alive.
Oh, I don't intend to. No question. I mean, I know. I'm, you know, they're liberals with Stalinist personalities, so I don't want to. Or Stalinist sense of humor, depending on how you want to look.
Now, see, there you go, validating Jonah Goldberg.
Yes. Well, you know, hey, listen, I mean, Robespierre was a liberal, too, technically speaking. So, and I actually do like the French Revolution. Brings out the vindictive in me.
Yeah, there's, well, from given my mood, there's a, from time to time, I think there's a lot to recommend it.
Yes. Same here.
The only thing is, somebody would eventually recommend us for
Yeah, I know, the revolution devouring its own children.
Yeah.
And actually, the liberals are usually the first to go.
Yeah, once we get it started, then we're no longer useful.
Yeah, I mean, and often the right and the left will reconcile, but the liberals always get killed in the meantime.
Yeah, exactly. Eugene, take care.
You too.
All right, bye
now.
Then.
Bye.
The Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, finnermanworks.com, finnermanworks.com. Your RDA of irony. If you aren't signed up and getting the daily RDA updates, I don't know what's wrong with you. Why aren't you? Because Eugene's great on the fly, but what he can do when he actually sits down and starts thinking about stuff, well, if you're not getting it, you don't know. So let's see, a quick break and we'll start the third hour. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. Halfway through January, on the way to our monthly goal, but traveling slowly, shall we say. Not quite to $1,000 of a $3,000 goal. That's all I'm going to say about it. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. General Motors is expecting low auto sales this year, and in anticipation, 46,000 workers will be eligible for early retirement buyouts. If that trend continues, the company has not been shy about suggesting capacity could be cut, resulting in more plant closures. The company is finalizing details with the United Auto Workers. With writers still on strike, Hollywood directors have made a deal with studios. Jesse Russell reports.
Groundbreaking and substantial are the words being used to describe the contract negotiated between Hollywood directors and studios. Negotiations between the two sides took 5 days, while the writers continued to strike after 2 months. According to the Directors Guild of America's Negotiations Committee, the agreement increases wages and residuals for every year of the contract and implements a new formula for pay based on internet downloads and programs distributed via streaming. The agreement could be a sign that the writer's strike, which has idled most of Hollywood, could be near an end. Internet residuals are at the core of the disagreement between the writers and the studios. The Directors Guild paid $2 million for a study determining the value of new media over the next 10 years.
When the nation celebrates Dr. Martin Luther King Day Monday, hundreds of Smithfield Foods workers are expected to celebrate even more intensely. That's because after taking on the company over the right to take time off work for that holiday, this is the first year that Smithfield Foods is officially recognizing the holiday. Thousands of workers had signed petitions, and others left the plant or stayed home on King Day last year to get the company to allow them this holiday. That collective action paid off. This year, Smithfield Foods is the largest private employer in North Carolina, recognizing the King holiday. In Memphis, the AFL-CIO is part of a several-day-long conference around King Day called Labor and Civil Rights, 40 Years of Keeping the Dream and the Movement Alive. Nearly 1,000 people are coming together between now and Monday to commemorate Dr. King's work and the Labor Civil Rights Alliance. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, and the Reverend Al Sharpton will be among the speakers. Donations of computer equipment and school supplies will be given to Memphis area students. Here's today's economic report. A new report from the Center for Economic and Policy Research and the Center for Women and Work at Rutgers University says a powerful stimulus package is needed immediately to address U.S. economic weakness. Economist Dean Baker says with the U.S. almost certainly on the verge of recession, a substantial stimulus is needed to lessen the recession's toll and put the nation back on solid financial footing. He says the package should include a tax cut for all workers and be equal to 1% of the gross domestic product to be effective.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, hour number three already. Who'da thunk it? And with us in the studio, a special guest just dropping by to drop off a little bit of iced tea and say howdy. Say howdy.
Howdy.
That's right. Agnes is in the house. And, you know, it won't be too much longer before little Loney comes toddling into the studio either, will it?
Not very long at all.
It's going to be charming.
Opa, what are you doing? Why are you screaming your full head off, Opa?
She already heard you, Opa.
Oh, did she?
Yes, we're listening.
Oh, bless her little heart. What a sweet baby. Good baby, too. No, I'm not biased at all. Hey, if you were looking for another reason to think that among the big three Democratic candidates, your best bet might be John Edwards. I got one for you. Out of Nevada this morning, John Edwards came out and specifically criticized Barack Obama, rightly so in my mind, for referring to Ronald Reagan as an agent of change. I mean, sure, okay, Ronald Reagan was an agent of change, but that sort of if you're going to do that, then you've got to explain that there's good change and that there's bad change. Ronald Reagan being an example of bad change. Joseph Stalin was an agent of change. Bad change, just like Ronald Reagan. Who else? Chairman Mao. Cultural Revolution. A lot of change in the Cultural Revolution. but it just happened to be bad change. So, bless his heart, John Edwards came out in an interview with the Reno Gazette Journal and Thunder Blast of Freedom, Moral Volcano, God bless you, Mark Twain, said that Reagan, quote, changed the trajectory of America, and said Americans, quote, want clarity. We want optimism. We want to return to that sense of dynamism and entrepreneurship. I could promise you this, he said, this president will never use Ronald Reagan as an example. He went on to say, I would never use Ronald Reagan as an example of change. You think about what Ronald Reagan did to America, the American people, to the middle class, to working people. He was openly, openly intolerant of unions and the right to organize. I'm sold. Really. While my heart is with Dennis Kucinich, my head more and more is with John Edwards. Because I don't want, and it's not symbolic to me, when you're willing to cite Ronald Reagan as a positive role model for anything, it tells me that you have a fundamental lack of understanding of American history. You know, just as Ronald Reagan was taking office, I was taking off for college. And I'll be honest, the choices I had for college were diminished by the policies of Ronald Reagan. Really. They had a direct impact on me. That's not to say I got a bad education. And you know what? I got a fabulous education. And my gratitude will never be quelled for what my parents did to make that education possible. And I only hope and, yes, even pray to the extent that I do, that I can do the same for our children, Agnes's and mine, and even our grandkids, which is grandkid right now, but one never knows. So I'm on board. I'm on board with John Edwards chiding Barack Obama for citing. What does he think? Does he think he's going to get some sort of crossover Republican? Oh, well, look, Barack Obama, he likes Ronald Reagan. So even though I'm a racist because I'm a Republican, I'm going to vote for Barack Obama because he said nice things about Ronald Reagan. What are you thinking, Senator Obama? Come on. Get with the team. Get on the team. Ronald Reagan, positive example of change. So, you know, I'm happy with Edwards. I'm happy with Edwards in that instance. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, I was going to mention that one, but you beat me to it on that one. It's like you're sitting there going, you know, you couldn't mention Jefferson. You couldn't mention Lincoln. I could live with Lincoln.
Eisenhower at this point, if you got to have a Republican, Eisenhower.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you couldn't pick Roosevelt, either one of them. You know, you have to go to Reagan Ronnie?
I know. Well, I mean,
well, it's like a couple of things I've sent you over the last couple of days. How'd you like the thing from Gene Lyons where he talks about the candidate who is out for change?
Yeah,
you know, that whole paragraph, and then you find out who that was, and you go, ooh.
I know. Yeah, of course, Matt Rothschild did a pretty good job today with the progressive in pointing out the change that a certain senator from New York has wrought in her political career.
But the one that got to me is, you know. Here we are, you know, we've talked about this before. Here you are, you've had Huckster beat, so who do we go talk to? No, we don't go talk to Gene Lyons. What fun would that be? He's seen him up close. You know, then today I sent you that one from Eric Zorn. You know, and Eric's telling us some things about Mr. Obama that, you know, amazingly enough, he's seen Obama up close. You know, I was talking talking about one or two things that Obama decided that he's going to push through, even if he destroys them while pushing them through.
So,
you know, that he wanted it his way. Once he got it his way, he was happy. Of course, the program had gone bankrupt while he was doing that, but hey.
Yeah, it was change.
Yeah, it's a change. I say, remember, change can mean a lot of things to a lot of people.
Well, and look, how often do we talk about global climate change? That's not good change we're having.
What was the thing they've been running? I know it's true. They said, you know, out of like the 279 debate questions, three of them have been on global warming.
No, not 279, 2,275.
Oh, okay. But you know what I mean? It was like three of them? You're like, three?
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't want to waste them. Don't want to waste time because we need to ask questions about what kind of a tree Senator Clinton would be if she was a tree. And whether Senator Obama prefers you know, butter on one side of his bread or both, or toast on one side, or
for rye toast, wheat toast, or regular toast,
Melba toast, you know.
Yeah. Oh God, you know what I mean? It's like, say, some of these things. You know, they were showing the thing today on CNN, the Crazy Network, as I call them now.
Yeah. Chicken Noodle News.
And they were showing the press plane, showing the press plane games on the plane. It's like, oh God, can we open the door and let somebody play jump? Come on. You know, oh God. If you want to play these games, it's like, look, folks, it's nice you're all having fun. We don't need you need anything covered on this, but you know, isn't it real nice how you're playing games with this one? But
draw every last one of them. Proud of that diploma from the Draw Spunky School of Journalism. Or I guess it would be the Write About Spunky School of Journalism.
Print Spunky School of Journalism, yes, indeed. You know, it's like, hey, you're supposed to stay separate. You know,
well, apparently, I was going to mention to you, apparently, you're familiar with Glenn Greenwald, right?
Yeah.
Glenn Greenwald has been upbraided by noted CNN political correspondent John King.
Oh, God.
You haven't seen this? Oh, this is beautiful. Apparently, Glenn Greenwald saw one of these "I want to have sex with you, John McCain" interviews that John King did.
Please tell us what inspiration you can be, Senator McCain.
And he Glenn Greenwald then piece by piece took it apart, and showed what a piece of fatuous garbage John King had produced. And it got so, apparently it resonated so thoroughly that John King felt compelled, and what's funny is when he does it, you can go over to salon.com and read this for yourself, and Greenwald has reproduced it verbatim, you know, right down to the misspells and bad grammars. Apparently when John King gets mad, all that sentence diagramming just sort of goes out the window for him.
A sputterer.
Email, yeah, it really is. Email from King John C. to Glenn Greenwald. Subject, excuse me? This is good. You're going to like this, Luke.
Okay.
I don't read biased, uninformed drivel, so I'm a little late to the game. But a friend who understands how my business works and knows a little something about my 20-plus years in it sent me the link to your ramblings. Since the site suggests you have law training, maybe you forgot that good lawyers do a little research before they spit out words. Did you think to ask me or anyone who works with me whether that was the entire interview? No, it was not. Just a portion used by one of the many CNN programs. Did you reach out to ask the purpose of that specific interview? No. Or how it might have fit in with other questions being asked of other candidates that day? No. Or anything that might have put facts or context or fairness into your critique? No. And he goes on like this for paragraphs.
It's like, look, you put it on the air, bud. You're saying this is what I want you to see. You cut it. You edit it.
Yeah. You clearly know very little about journalism. But credibility matters. It is what allows you to cover six presidential campaigns and be viewed as fair and respectful, while perhaps a little cranky, but Democrats and Republicans alike. When I am writing something that calls someone's credibility into question, I pick up the phone and give them a chance to give their side or perspective. Oh, please. Or as Bugs Bunny would say, oh, Margaret. So apparently, I don't know. Maybe some of this is getting under their skin. I wonder if Brian Williams or Tim Russert have caught any of the commentary about their debate performance the other night, Luke.
Well, apparently, I saw this evening that apparently I think they made Chris Matthews go on and apologize this evening. But apparently, you know, all the stuff, Media Matters and all this stuff. But apparently, the first 10 or 15 minutes of his show this evening, he was doing one of his heartfelt apologies. Then 5 minutes later, I'm sure he was attacking the Clintons again.
Oh, sure.
You know, the thing most people don't realize, when he made that little statement where he said the only reason Hillary was senator was because her husband fooled around, was the night after Tom Brokaw had dressed him down at the New Hampshire primaries. You know, they went through that whole thing about 11 o'clock at night where Tom Brokaw went out there and said, you know, we're all getting too far ahead of this. So the next morning, what does Chris Matthews do? Well, he goes on to Morning Joe and opens his mouth. The first mistake. Then he starts speaking. Second mistake. Then he keeps speaking. Third mistake.
Oh, I know.
It's like he wasn't in the middle of an argument and he only sputtered something out. This was him talking all on his own. Just with Joe sitting there kind of probably egging him on a little.
Now, you want to get an idea of the hard-hitting journalism that John King involved himself in. Just wait for this. I mean, it's right up there with if you were a tree, what kind of a tree would you be? Question one, if you can call this a question, dig this. Yeah, I mean, you're gonna kick something. You're gonna scream, Luke. You were speaking yesterday on the one-year anniversary of the president calling for the troop surge about how A, you think it was the right policy, and B, you think, frankly, you deserve a little credit because you stood up and pushed for it when it was unpopular. It was interesting yesterday. I kept looking at my BlackBerry emails all day long. I didn't hear the Democratic candidates talking much about that date. What does that tell you about the evolution of the policies, politics of Iraq, if you will? And would you please zip up your pants when you're done? As you know...
There is no evolution of the politics. This was just putting cops on the street.
Yeah, and it didn't work.
Because they just went to other streets. It's like, yes, we quieted Baghdad down. And it's like, yes, of course, most people aren't reporting the fact that a whole bunch of neighborhoods in Baghdad now are been ethnically cleansed.
And what Greenwald finishes with, his final comment, and I guess this is what just got John King's knickers all in a vile twist. If you wanted to create a parody simultaneously mocking the drooling vapidity of our media stars and their giggly collective crush on John McCain, it would be impossible to create something more illustrative than what John King did here. For reverent, propagandizing behavior from our liberal media comparable to this, one has to go all the way back to the 2000 to 2005 lionization of the great warrior King George W. Bush. That McCain press bus is virtually pornographic. And that's what made John King cry. You know he cried, right?
Oh God, I had to.
I mean, you can tell it in the email. He cried. I'm sure he was hysterical.
Probably had a towel there. You know.
I mean, if Hillary Clinton drawing a deep sigh qualifies as her bawling, I'm sure that John King was inconsolable.
Well, the thing, if you go to Crooks and Liars, I think it's still there. Remember, did you see the thing last week where Rudy Giuliani was using all the news people, their coverage in one of his little ads. So Oberman and them put together a thing with how many times he was using 9/11.
Yeah, that was gorgeous.
You know, it was like the Brady Bunch thing to 1,000%. You know, it's like, how many times has he said 9/11? Oh my God, can't count that high. You know, it was one right after the other.
Well, I'm glad when I see somebody like
like Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah, calling these people to task.
You know,
because it doesn't happen enough.
Oh, no. As I say, the people who, quote-unquote, are media critics, unfortunately, are part of the media. Most times you ever watch their stuff, they're not talking about the media. They're talking about the story just from the media's point of view. You know, half the time, if you ever watch Kurtz's show on a Sunday, he isn't talking about what the media did. He's talking about the story that the media just covered, just rehashing it again.
Sure.
You know, it's like, well, when are you going to talk about what the reporters were saying? Well, he doesn't have to talk about that. He's got to talk about the story.
Because if he talked about the reportage, he might actually have to engage in some on-air honesty, and then, well, you know, all bets are off.
Hey, you know, it's like the thing you've been talking about. I saw this morning they were all over themselves on ABC. I think it was ABC or no, CNN on the main channel this morning. They were all over themselves covering this thing with Glenn Beck's hospital stay.
Oh no, that is so last week.
Well, the thing of it is, like you said, here's a guy staying in a for-profit hospital, but is now bitching about the government-run hospital.
Yeah, the government did it to him, even though the government didn't have a hand in any of it.
Huh? But that gives him an excuse to complain about them damn government hospitals and how badly they treated me.
And see, the other thing is, him being a Republican and all, he knows that by talking about it in the course of his show and getting a story done about him, it makes it a business expense. So now he writes off everything while he was flat on his back as tax write-off.
Well, like I say, the thing was, I was watching this morning on the CNN morning show, and they're sitting there talking to him, and I'm going, ask him a real question. I mean, this was Tim Russert's setup piece. Tell us what happened, you know.
Did you want a teddy bear when you were in pain? Did you want to shoot the teddy bear, Glenn?
You know, it's like, you know, ask something. You know, you supposedly went to, like you say, you went to the right spunky school. Ask a question. You know, it's like that's the problem. Half of them is they all. It's like say, it's packed journalism. They all know what the answer is because they've got. It's like the people who do the Disney interviews, as I used to call them. You know, on our midday news thing, they used to have the interview from down at Disney World, and you'd have some celebrity or something would come in there, and you could tell they had five or six questions that everybody asked them. You know what I mean? They're answering that question, and then they give the question to the next person in Johnson City, Tennessee, and the person in Frankfort, Kentucky, to ask that same person and make it look like it's a real interview. You know, it's not a real interview. It's a real answer session. You're just putting questions to the answer tape. And that's what some of this stuff is. They know what the answers are. Now they're just got to put their questions so it'll fit.
Well, you know, it's...
Oh, one question off topic a little bit.
Oh, sure.
Did you all have much snow this morning?
No, surprisingly not, but we got enough ice to cancel school.
Well, ours was water, but you know how it is. No one was real sure until we realized it wasn't getting as cold as they kept saying, you know, it was going to. So
it was, however, sufficient to make the last leg of our internet connection, which is provided by the world's most incompetent communications company, Verizon. It was sufficient to bust our connection.
Oh.
So bless their hearts, CityNet was out there banging away, trying to get our connectivity back up. For those who listened to the stream throughout the day and suddenly began hearing the classical music, that's why.
It's one of those things you're sitting there going, you know, folks, for the last 3 months we've been had chance. You could have been out here in pleasant weather cutting limbs and stuff. Why weren't you?
Well, because they'd rather do it in the dead of winter, so then they can go to the PSC and we need a rate increase.
True. No, it's like I say, we'll just wait and see what the next bit of
journalistic drivel.
No, not that. It's sort of like the theater of the absurd. You know,
like,
I've seen some of this stuff, and I go, damn, I've seen better skits on Saturday Night Live. You know.
And frankly, it's gotten worse. Matt Lauer, you know who Jim Cramer is, of course.
Yeah. God, they did one of his free advertisements for him.
Well, Matt Lauer had Jim Cramer on the Today Show, and really for me, I keep talking about pulling the curtain back or yanking off the rubber mask, and you know, I'm back. This is one of those moments. Let me see if I can get it to go here. Because I had it lined up, but, you know, you appreciate this kind of thing, so let's share. Here we go.
Jim, good morning. Nice to see you.
Good to see Matt.
They always say when you have a problem, the best thing you first have to do is admit that you have a problem. We've got inflation reaching a 17-year high. We've got lots of other problems. Are we in a recession?
Yes, we're in a recession. We should stop worrying about inflation. That will be taken care of, unfortunately, by the decline in business that a recession gives you.
You know what people come up to me and say a lot on the street, especially after you've been...
You know what a lot of people... Yeah. Some people, it's Fox journalism, it's viral. Some people say, many people believe. Well, let's find out what many people say to Matt Lauer, because, you know, there's probably thousands of them between the door to, 30 Rockefeller Center and the door to his limousine, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just everybody just saying to him stuff, you know, because he's down there, he's going to go down to the Bowery and hang out with the common man after the show, maybe drink a little screw top wine or something, I don't know.
And they say, why don't you guys stop talking about recession? Because simply by talking about it, you're going to freak out consumers and definitely push us into one. Is there any logic to that thinking?
Well, if I was the reason why a Citigroup has $40 billion in charges,
I'm not blaming you personally.
No, the answer is that we have to point out the positives with the negatives.
But if consumer confidence and spending is a large part of what goes into possibly creating a recession, by talking about it more, is there an emotional side
to
this?
There is. Okay. There is. But also we have to report the news. And there is an astounding decline in business in the country. If we
Here
say
comes
that
the good
there
part.
Isn't, why we cannot be possibly doing our jobs.
We've got rising unemployment. We've got energy and food prices rising at the fastest rate in 17 years. There is talk about the...
Charming. Well, why don't you guys just, like, you know, not tell the truth?
Yeah, that's right. Lie to us. Come on, you do that well. Come
and
on.
See, the beauty of that, though, is that, you know, he's not saying that. Somebody came up to him and said that. Somebody asked him that at a cocktail party. Can't you just get these economists to just lie? Can't they just tell us everything is sunshine and daisies?
That's been the last five or six years, you know, it's like, say, I still think we should go back to when Greenspan should be tried for treason.
But the what really kills me out of this is, you know, he puts it in the, you know, some people say, but then the follow up question makes it clear that it's his question. So he confessed that he just now lied by putting it in some people say's mouth.
Oh, you know how it is. It's like listening to the big giant head. You know, it's like, say, if you ever can stand him for more than 10 or 12 seconds at a time. You know, when the big giant head's doing this stuff, you're sitting there going, you know, you're just making this up as you go along, aren't you? I bet 10-1 that teleprompter ain't even working. You know, you ain't got this written down. You couldn't be that stupid. And I go, well, yes, you can, but still, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I saw Mr. Romney went out today to prove he could do what apparently he wanted to do the George Bush, I know what a cash register trip is.
went shopping, did he?
Yeah, it looks like he's at but I'm sitting here, I've got the sound down. Apparently it looked like he was at a Home Depot or Lowe's or something along those lines. Ace Hardware, whatever.
Didn't go to Staples?
That was at Staples. I'm sorry, yeah, because he had the easy button.
You're kidding.
Dude.
No, I was being a smartass.
Oh, no.
Mitt went to Staples.
With a shot, he had the easy button in his hand. I forgot about that.
Huh. That's just precious.
So apparently he got in an argument with an AP reporter, and they got that on camera.
Oh, Willard, Mitt had a snit?
He had a snit, and then one of his assistants got over and got in the guy's face, and it's still all on camera.
Jesus.
Let's put this.
Oh, it's such a long way to November, Luke.
I was going to say, set the VCR for midnight and catch Overman on the repeat. Oh, no, you don't get it. I'm sorry.
No, I'll have to wait till it shows up at Crooks and Liars.
I'm sure it's Crooks and Liars, I'm sure, because this is a classic.
They watch TV, so I don't have to.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's what it was. You're just sitting there going, you can't be doing this, can you? No, 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 no. It's like when somebody starts arguing like that, walk away. Just walk away. Because you can't win.
But the other fun time, I got a note from our good buddy David in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
He and the other residents of Florence, South Carolina, got a visit from radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee today.
Oh God!
Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee went to Myrtle Beach and Florence today to talk about the Confederate flag.
Oh
Yeah, I know. It's another one of those, you know, don't. Yeah, I'm a Southerner, but I'm not a Southerner like their Southerners kind of moments.
Well, it's one of the things. It's like, as bad as all this is, the stuff he's been talking about with the Constitution, you're like, you know, you really just want to sit there and back the tape up and go, he didn't really say that, did he?
I don't care how many times you play it, and I've played it a million. He keeps on saying it. And expanded on it today, saying that if we don't amend the Constitution to make sure that a couple of guys can't pick out a China pattern, that it'll lead to men marrying dogs.
Oh, dear God, we're into the Ghostbusters thing again. Oh, God. Dogs and cats living together. Oh, sin. Oh, my God.
Yep. Dipty's wicking the Santorum, as I said earlier.
Oh, God. Did they ever... On a simpler story, did they ever decide that they're going to blow up those heads down in Myrtle Beach?
I think they're just going to wait for the rain.
Maybe everybody should get out there with super soakers.
Well, I just want to see what happens. I would actually prefer the rain because most of the time when I listen to these idiots, it feels like being on an acid trip anyway.
Maybe we should get everybody.
So, you know, if I got to see their faces melt, it would just add the visual element, and I'd be right at home.
Hey, the last thing, maybe we should get everybody in the area to bring their dogs down and have them all lift a leg at the same time. You know,
we cannot have Republican sand sculpture desecration. We need a constitutional amendment to bring the Constitution in line with God's standards on dogs urinating on sand sculptures.
Oh, dear God, we'll have Sean Hannity down doing a live remote. The baby Jesus is down here talking about destruction of the...
Fred man. Thompson is melting, America. It's unpatriotic. Liberals are... It's the liberal rain.
Well, most of us are like I say, we've already started early voting here. But most of us are hoping for the South Carolina. We're hoping Fred makes a good showing so we can break this up five ways.
and then break it off. Yeah. Fred won't carry Tennessee, will he?
Probably.
No.
There's enough Republicans that are that crazy. Of course there are. You got to remember, we're the people, you know, I say that put in, we have two coma patients, you know, that are right now in serving in Congress. Corker and Alexander, between the two of them, they can't find a pulse.
Oh, God. Yeah, sure. It'll sure keep it interesting. And, you know, every time the journalism squad actually has to work on a new meme, you know, I mean, because, you know, Willard Romney threw everything into chaos with Michigan, didn't he?
Oh, God.
It wasn't.
It's like everybody gets a turn. I wonder if Ron Paul finally gets to win one.
But why is it? Now, wait a minute, Luke. Why is it that the Republicans get to have a multi-candidate race, but the Democrats have to have a two-way horse race?
Don't look at me like you say. I haven't gone yet, but right now, unless anything changes, I'm voting for Edwards. Because, like I say, I think between the three of them, he makes the most sense.
By a long shot. By a long shot. And has the best chance of beating any one of these freaks.
Yeah.
Because I am convinced in my soul that Hillary Clinton or neither her nor she nor Barack Obama could beat McCain, could beat Huckabee, Romney.
Well, you know, it's like we said what we've been going through lately. This ain't even the warm ups yet. Said once the Republican hate machine gets done picking their choice, then they turn on us.
Yeah, and they'll have plenty of money to do it with by then too.
Well, you saw that somebody is putting out some movie about Hillary.
Yeah, and it's been a court ruled that it's actually advertising, and it's a hit piece, and yeah.
I saw that. I was like, oh damn! I said that's just the first of many, I'm sure. Well, I tell you, but I've taken up way too much of your time.
Oh, not at all, Luke. Don't worry. It's always a joy, but you know, hang in there. I'm gonna.
Oh, one quick thing.
Yeah, sure.
What? Since you're up local. Okay, now what's the news story now? Did they shred all the playbooks or what?
We've taken to referring to him as Dick Shredriguez.
Oh God!
There hasn't been so much shredding going on since Thon Hall spent a long night with Ollie North.
Xerox man, apparently. Hey, but like I say, you know the thing I always loved. Is as of late, you know, the one of the good coaches this year everybody's in favor of is Mr. Zook.
Yeah.
people forget what Ron Zook's claim to fame on here was. He's the one they caught faxing his playbook to Florida when he was when he left Tennessee. That the local Kinko's people caught him faxing our playbook to the University of Florida.
Oh, that's true, and he is the darling of the moment.
Oh, yes.
He's
amazingly enough, that story never seems to come up.
No, because, well, look, and that's the commonality. We have, by virtue of the fact that there are all of maybe six media companies now, mm-hmm. we have total information management, total information control, so that if somebody does come out and try to give that story a little kickstart, you know, right down the memory hole. Yeah.
If I say that's one question I would love to be able to ask them at one of these debates. What are you going to do to break up the FCC's corporate love fest?
And the right wing is having a hissy about that. I saw a right wing news alert today saying that Hillary, you know, they're pushing Hillary so hard I could hardly, you know, it's astonishing.
That's what I'm hoping.
But Hillary will create the fairness doctrine. She is hell bent on taking truth and freedom off the airwaves. Rush Limbaugh, Don Imus, they've got Imus in the crowd now. Rush Limbaugh, Don Imus, Michael Savage, Sean Hannity, Neil Bortz, and Bill O'Reilly will all be threatened if Hillary gets her hands on the government.
Oh boy.
I can't tell you why they're so anxious to run against her, but I got a pretty good idea.
Well, you know, it's weird, though, when you see some of the Republicans. A lot of the Republicans are saying all awful nice things about Obama. You know, you get a lot of, I could see us voting for him.
See, it's all does the road to Malmedy lead to Anblev? It really is. It's misdirection. And as Democrats were sitting around going, what?
One other quick thing I forgot. Serpentine.
Yeah, serpentine, Sheldon, serpentine.
It's like...
I just love that movie.
It's good. I still love it just for the opening of it.
Oh, yeah, with the treasury truck being hijacked, sure.
And you have no clue what's going on.
No, and, you know, the Vince talking, oh, I don't play tennis. I never got into playing tennis. Maybe it's because you have to wear those... Those funny looking shorts.
All righty, bud. I'll see you.
All right.
Have a good evening.
Take care, Luke. See ya. Bye now. The signature line from the in-laws. Serpentine, Sheldon. Serpentine. Yeah, just in case you were wondering.
That crazy little bastard, he's involved your poor father in something.
Yeah, that's the in-laws. Or, you know, translated to modern times.
Oh, Christ! Eric! What are you talking about?
Christ! Hey! I bet it's Arabs! I saw a TV show. This is what they do.
Yeah, I saw a TV show. That's what they do, the Arabs. No, but I was going to... I mentioned a little bit about radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee's trip to South Carolina today. Or a trip through South Carolina. Our good friend David wrote to tell me that he was, in fact, in Florence, South Carolina today, speaking to the faithful. Made basically the same speech, the same comments in Myrtle Beach that he made in Florence. It was all about the Confederate flag. Do you get the idea that he's got his finger on the right-wing redneck pulse? You're damn right he does. You don't like people from outside the state coming in and telling you what to do with your flag, Huckabee said at a Myrtle Beach campaign event. In fact, if somebody came to Arkansas and told us what to do with our flag, wait for it, we'd tell them what to do with the pole. That's what we'd do. Now here's a guy who can't go 15 minutes without making some sort of sexual reference, some sort of obsessive compulsive reference to people who have sex differently with him. You know, if we have if gay marriage, I mean, he said it. This isn't me paraphrasing. He said that if
He said that gay marriage would lead to men marrying animals.
Sort of reminds you, since we're doing new movie references, reminds you of Woody Allen's Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask, where the scene pulls back to Gene Wilder in bed with a sheep that's like done up in lingerie. I am in love with a sheep. But no, he says that, and then he turns, we'd tell him what we'd do, what to do with the pole. Well, you know what he meant, and everybody in the room knew what the Reverend meant. These people are just a little bit too upset. I don't know if they were potty trained too early, potty trained at gunpoint, pure, unmitigated Freudian obsession, the anal retentive. I don't know. We'd tell them what to do with the pole. Well, what is that, Mike? What is that, buddy? Come on. You can say it out loud. You don't have to rely on innuendo, you man of God, you. And they say that it is dead. It's a dead heat in South Carolina between radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee and John McCain. And I don't know who to root for or against. We'd tell them what to do with the pole. See, that's like I told a dirty joke, but I didn't really tell a dirty joke because I'm a Christian. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
This is Alan.
Hey, Alan, how you doing?
Hanging in there.
Good.
Hey, I saw a museum today when I was driving down the road, a sign for a museum. It's called the Museum of Working Culture. I think it was in Rhode Island or maybe Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a museum now called the Museum of Working Culture? I imagine that's, a museum that I saw, it's a museum that was for, 30 years ago or so, but I can't imagine culture mixed with work these days, what the Republicans have put on us.
No, I know what you're getting at, and you're absolutely right.
That would be called maybe Museum of Work and Feudalism.
Yeah, or the Museum of Work Will Make You Free. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So I got your email last night. Are you still are you still in the truck, or are you on the way home?
I'm still in the truck. They didn't kind of, it didn't happen the way I was. Things happen for the good, but I think my next home time I'm going to switch to doing something else for a change. I've been doing this for too long.
Any idea which direction you're going to go in?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I told you I have a Sprinter van.
Yeah.
Cargo van, and I think I'm just going to fix it up and drive that thing for a while. See how I could do with it.
Yeah, just take small loads from point A to point B, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and be more like an owner-operator, and maybe I could haul some of my artwork around.
Hey, that'd be fun, too. I saw some of the photos you sent. You're doing some beautiful stuff.
Thank you.
And go ahead.
Yeah, maybe give me time to go see friends and things like this. It's like I've been in a prison in this truck for the last 8 years, and I just think I want to do something different.
Take a little break. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. So you were up in Rhode Island today?
Oh, yeah. I haven't been up this way in a while. It's pretty tough to drive a truck. A lot of low bridges and no place to park at night.
Vile highway conditions or any bad weather?
No, it's pretty good up here. There's snow on the ground, but they got the roads all cleared off and salted, so it's not bad. But it's pretty bad down south, it sounds like in Atlanta. Haven't checked the news today.
Well, the ice, yeah, ice is just, it's just miserable.
Oh, well.
I'd rather have 2 feet of snow than 2 inches of ice. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, same here. I was listening to Democracy Now! Today, and they were talking about how Mitt Romney was related to this company called Bain Capital.
Yeah, that's where he made his millions.
So I kind of got an idea of what you folks were talking about when we talked about Staples.
Well, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it when Luke said a couple of minutes ago that he went shopping at Staples today. That just blew me away.
Because that's like his store, isn't it?
It's what he bought stock in. Had he bought stock in something else that went bust, he'd just be another broke guy.
Well, I got here on my laptop computer, I've been looking at Wikipedia, Bain Capital, and they major stockholder of Home Depot and all kinds of companies.
So
Burlington Coke Factory. He's one of the wealthiest people in the country, isn't he?
And he's not going to be eating beans anytime soon, that's for sure.
I can't believe it. Last Thanksgiving, my brother-in-law, who's always been a rich Republican, was complaining about how rich and wealthy John Edwards is.
Well, yeah, see, apparently there's a rule out there that says if you're rich, you're not allowed to... You're not allowed to speak up for people who aren't as rich as you are. It's pure hypocrisy. This business, but it's not unusual, because you got to remember, you can go back a little more than a half a century and you can find rich right wing Republicans calling Franklin Delano Roosevelt a traitor to his class.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
But those people were so short sighted, Alan, that they don't realize that every now and then you've got to throw a sop to the poor just so that you can go on living rich.
Well, that's why our economy is going bad. It's because the working people haven't been making any money to spend money. It's like they don't understand the most basics of economics.
Yeah. I know.
You know what I mean? I mean, people don't have money to go buy computers or whatever, go to the department store and buy things, then the economy's going to go bust.
Because that's the kind of phony baloney that this economy's based on. It's not based on our ability to make things anymore. It's based on the ability of people to go and buy stuff that they don't necessarily need at Walmart. And that may seem a little bit cruel, but it's true. We don't have a real economy anymore. We've got a phony, baloney, ginned up, dummied up, faked up, frauded up economy.
Yeah,
based on inflated prices, based on the fraudulent corporate earning reports. I mean, look at that. All you got to do is take a hard look at the housing bubble, Alan, and you realize this. I remember the right wingers just screaming, just having hissies, saying that what Bill Clinton did with the economy during his presidency. What were their positions? A, any good that came of it was due to Ronald Reagan, and B, even if there was any good of it that was due to Bill Clinton, it was fake because it was all based on the phony .com bubble.
Yeah,
and yet they are as silent as the moldy grave when it comes to the bubble economy that George Bush has lived on, that hasn't even had the semblance of uniform prosperity for all segments of America. You could at least make a little bit of that argument, even though it might not have been entirely true. You could make an argument that the rich under Bill Clinton, the rich got richer and the poor got better off. But not for the last 8 years. No, no, no.
Yeah.
So.
But that.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed.
Yeah. And then Truman said that any Democrat who tries to act like a Republican would lose election. Didn't he say that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Well, I was thinking that if Obama wins election and then he winds up acting like a Republican when he's in office and keeps on with the same old that's going on now, then I think a lot of people would be waking up.
Well, you'd hope. You would hope.
A lot of racist white people would be waking up about the economy.
I don't know. No. See, I don't think those people wake up. They, if something, And see, that's the success of the right wing, where people who aren't of their class, the uber rich right wing Republicans, that's been their success, is to get poor people who don't have a lot of analytical power behind their skulls, to get them to look at their own miserable circumstances, and instead of looking at the real cause of it, to look and say, well, it's because of them illegal immigrants. How many times have you heard that? How many times have you seen it? In other words, they've taught the ignorant to blame their own problems on someone else.
It used to be the poor blacks. Now it's the immigrants.
Yeah. Let's see. I guess, yeah, you could say that the general group, there's sort of a trinity of hate among the right wing, especially the poor right wing. Illegal immigrants, African Americans, well, let's make it four, gay people and godless atheists. That's the cause of all of America's problems, and all you have to do is listen to a Huckabee Stump speech, and he'll tell you so.
Yeah, and they blame it on unions too, believe it
yeah,
or not.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, sure, Bolshevik unions, can't forget them.
Yeah.
It's sickening, Alan. It's truly sickening.
What a mess.
I know. Well, you drive careful, will you?
Okay. I'll be listening.
All right. Take care. Bye now. Okay. A couple of stories just to finish off. A little bit of serious analysis. And then just one delightfully stupid story to close the evening. Serious analysis first. Yesterday, a Republican lawmaker named Pete Hoekstra, a Michigan Republican, who I guess is the ranking Repiglican on the House Intelligence Committee, came out and announced that the torture videotapes were destroyed by an individual who acted without the direction of his superiors. The quote from Hoekstra, it appears that he hadn't gotten authority from anyone. It appears he got direction to make sure the tapes were not destroyed. I believe there are parts of the intelligence community that don't believe they are accountable to Congress and may not be accountable to their own superiors in the intelligence community, and that's why it's a problem. Okay? Now, that all sounds well and good. Oh, boy, I tell you what. He's mad, isn't he? But as usual, just as there is music between the notes in the silences, so too there is truth in what is not said by the likes of a Pete Hoekstra. And that truth is that the seed he planted is that the torture videotapes were destroyed completely by a free agent acting alone, a loose cannon on deck, if you will. What does this do? You know what this does? This provides cover. Cover for whom? Well, cover for the higher ups at the CIA, and particularly cover within the White House. Because the destruction of the torture videos is felonious. Now, we're supposed to believe that a CIA operative acting on his own initiative destroyed those videotapes despite being told not to. And that there's no similarity whatsoever with the story the other day about the fact that the Bush administration said, whoops, we recycled our magnetic digital backup computer tapes, and well, gosh golly gee, we just taped over the 6 million emails from right about the time that we were cooking up all the lies we were going to use to start the war against the people of Iraq. Daggummit. Rotten luck, guys. Sorry about that. Never mind the fact that it's a clear and obvious felonious violation of federal law. And no, that sort of thing doesn't carry over institutionally into an organization like the CIA. The guy that destroyed the torture tapes, he was a lone wolf. A lone wolf. Horse feathers. Haven't we already been told that the CIA torture tapes were destroyed on orders? Wasn't that the nature of the testimony under oath in front of the Congress? Now, who's lying? But, you know, that's the kind, but, you know, you're not going to get that kind of analysis anywhere. You're not going to get anybody asking hard questions about that. Oh, no. Because if John King, for instance, at CNN had to ask a hard question about it, it would probably make him cry. So, sorry, America. The evidence of blatant violation of the law, the evidence of impeachable offenses, you know, it's just gone. It just got disappeared. It was a guy operating on his own. It just one day he walked in, you know, we saw him, you know, he was drinking wine out of a screw top bottle, had about 2/3 of a bottle of Mad Dog 2020 plum flavor, plum supreme. It was just gone. He drank it and he just came in and took them the CIA torture videotapes and said, "I'm going to destroy these tapes." And we said, don't, but then he just destroyed them anyway. I hate it when that happens. You believe that? I don't believe that. And belief is a function of credibility, so we can use that awful little word. We can use the believe word in this instance. I am as certain as I can be. I am as certain as I am that the sun will rise in the morning in the east. That based on the evidence that has come before us heretofore, the CIA torture tapes were damned well destroyed on orders that came from the top. Leave no fingerprints, you know. And finally, just so you can know, sleep tight, because Lionel Spruill, a right-wing Republican lawmaker in Virginia, understands that there are some things that just can't wait legislatively and have to be addressed as soon as possible. Economics can wait. Justice can wait. Everything can wait because Lionel Spruill is hell-bent on protecting the state of Virginia from fake testicles. No, really. Not kidding. From fake testicles. Spruill received a complaint from a constituent. Now understand, there apparently in some sectors it's a happening fun sort of thing to do to go and buy a fake scrotum, big fake scrotum that you then put underneath the trailer hitch of your SUV or your big old honking pickup truck or whatever. Don't ask. I don't know why. But Spruill received a complaint from a constituent who had seen one of these things. And he said, "I was driving along with my six-year-old daughter in the car, and she saw them, and she asked me what they were, and I was left speechless because my daughter asked me what the giant testicles were." So, right-wing Republican lawmaker Spruill wants to make sure that in the state of Virginia, that truck drivers sporting big fake testicles on their vehicles would risk a $250 fine. He said, "Well, they're offensive to some folks. It's okay to express yourself, but citizens have the right not to be subjected to something vulgar." I'm guessing lawmaker Spruill wouldn't have done so well in the 19th century. Or maybe he would have crafted a law in the House of Burgesses or something that would have mandated the castration of all horses. That would have worked out nicely, wouldn't it? He became, Spruill did, more concerned when he found out that the giant testicles were getting even gianter the more popularity they got. And he asked, how big are they going to go? When will it stop? Apparently you can buy these things at bullsballs.com, BullsBallS.com. He's apparently sold several hundred thousand units, ranging in size from 2.5 to 10 inches. Not in Virginia, buddy. Not in the Old Dominion. We got a sense of decency around here. What if a 6-year-old sees them? That's a 6-year-old who's apparently been raised in a damn bubble and never seen a dog or a cat. What are those? Nothing for you to worry about until you're married, honey. I'm so glad. I am so glad that we have the Republican Party out there looking out for us. I hate to think about what an America with freewheeling giant fake testicles on every vehicle would be like. What will we tell the children? I mean, if you can't look at a 6-year-old and say, well, you know, they're giant fake testicles. What's a testicle? You'll find out when you're married, dear. I'm so glad I'm not one of them. I'm so glad that I don't walk around every day horrified and terrified. The American Family Association, as led by the Reverend Donald Wildman, is having an absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming kittens with crocheted tails hissy because Diane Keaton a couple of days ago on Good Morning America said the F word, and apparently it got past the person who had the dump button. They sent out a notice saying, demand that ABC be fined. What will we? How will we explain it to the children? We'd be lost if it wasn't for the Republican morality police looking out for our well-being. Thanks, everybody. That's it. Coming your way next, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential, with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold. No Foxed Up tonight, no horn section. But you're going to have a wonderful 2 hours with Peter Godbold coming up. Thanks to Peter Godbold, who's also our IT professional. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer and all around the make the stuff behave, not go crunk guy. Many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. And thanks to the fine, fine people at Coal River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net. If you haven't joined, I don't know why, but you oughta. CRMW.net. A part of the solution, a vision for the future. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
Gather round the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 103 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, January 17. One more moment, I'm making a slight adjustment for the studio. We've been having some audio level problems lately, and we've been working those out. There we go, studio. Maybe that'll help. And so if you are indeed listening on a Thursday evening, because today is, in fact, Thursday, January the 17th, 2008, you are listening to a live show. And this live show can be phoned into so that it becomes real conversation radio. You can phone in on a Thursday evening shortly after 9 p.m., which is January the 17th. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. The toll line, if you have unlimited long distance, is area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. And as I said, this is the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on listener-supported Head On Radio Network. If you could stop by headonradionetwork.com. You'll see the PayPal buttons there, and you can help keep the packets passing and the reels turning and the cassettes cassetting and the CDs spinning and all the things that have to happen for this to magically appear on your computer. Six is actually 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. The stream is normally live at all times. And we're running, oh Lord, I've lost track. We were running 12 hours of live and 12 hours of pre-recorded at one point. I think we've exceeded that. I'd have to check with Bob to find out what the new numbers are. But all I can tell you is there's a lot of stuff going on in the Head-On Radio Network by anyone's description. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from the past shows. You're going to find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. You'll find links to the Head-On Radio Network main site, and there are lists there of all the other progressive programming and the scheduling on the Head-On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links there to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Speaking of MySpace, I told you a story yesterday evening, shortly after the show began. I was thrilled to say that I had been contacted by Ronnie Kerr. Met him on MySpace, and I was floored to see that Ronnie Kerr is actually a movie star, among many other things. Ronnie is a professional tennis player and a personal trainer and a stuntman and an actor. He's got it all going on. He will be joining us tomorrow evening as the guest. Tonight is a Just Us.